Mr. Peterson?
No, I think I owe you an apology, sir.
Well, I should say you do.
Well,
I think you should be sorry, for Christ's sake. A family member dies, and you insult me. What the hell is the matter with you, anyway?
I really don't know, sir. I mean, I didn't think I was talking to you. I thought I was talking to somebody else. You know, sir, that I would never deliberately insult you like that. I can't begin to tell you how embarrassed I am.
What? Pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
What?
Asshole!
You're absolutely right, sir. You've hit the nail right in the head.
Find out where she is.
This isn't over yet, Buster. Do you read me?
Loud and clear, Mr. Peterson.
Call me sir, goddammit.
Yes, 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 sir, yes, sir.
That's better. Now you just mind your P's and Q's, Buster, and remember who you're dealing with.
Man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a manny, manny, man, a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Now you're a man. Live it, live it. What makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties. Now you're a man.
It is 22 minutes after the hour of one, and this, the month of November, in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. It is, I swear to Christ, it actually is day 12. It's November 12th, 2010. Draw near that ye might be amused and informed on this glorious, fantastic Friday. If you'd like to join us today, and why wouldn't you, really? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, really, when you look at the true measure of your life, when you look at the scope of your existence, these 70-odd years that you spend mingling among your compatriots of planet Earth, why would you not take just a parcel, a slice, a sliver, a small fraction, a fragment of that day and interact with us? There's really no reason. I mean, none, zero, not one, zilch. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to engage with us telephonically. It's 503 505-6964 if you want to weigh in with your comments, questions, clarifications, combinations of the above, your ruminations, your ponderings, your amusements, whatever it is you might have to share with us on this Friday. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached as well. That is Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Isn't that right, Don Taylor?
Indeed it is.
Excellent. Let's see. The text box is open on the website. You can go to Skype if you want. That's Rick Emerson Show. That's our Skype username there. And, you know, in any and all permutations of the above. It's 503-505-6964. Here's, I mentioned this during Legion of News last hour. Hold on. The best part is now you're just actually wrinkling your brow in preemptive disgust. You don't even know what the story is.
That actually hurts a little bit when you do that. It's like in the headphones.
This?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a sharp sound.
What if I, let's see, what if I do it the other way? What if I do it like a... No, that didn't really work.
Yeah,
it's
no.
Got a... Right there. Does it, I mean, does it, when you say it's a sharp sound, is it just that it's loud or is it the frequency?
Yeah, I think it's that. It's just, it's the nature of that. I have a tiny little bit of a headache, like right in my forehead.
Oh.
And so that sound is something that just kind of goes ping off the forehead headache.
Is this the thing where, like, when you have a headache and there are just certain frequencies that seem to find their way through the armor of your head?
Yeah, it just seems to vibrate that particular headachey thing more than other things
All right.
do.
I'll try not to do it.
Okay.
I'll just it's a thing I do.
Well, thank you.
I got the
it's
two
fine
things.
If you do it down there.
I'll just
when you do it. Yeah.
I just lacks the same punch, though. Okay, I just won't do it. I just... No, it's fine. I'll, It's Rick Emerson Gives. I'm here to make everybody's life better, not worse.
I appreciate your consideration in this manner.
I got the two things. I got the Letterman thing I do where I tap the pen like this, and then I got the, that, which I do right in front of the microphone, which is a Rush Limbaugh thing, which I've just been, like, doing for... And occasionally I will do it with such force and vigor that I just tear the story in half. Which I don't think he ever does because he's a professional. Just say, I have here from the Des Moines Register, and then he'll go like that. And then I just, you know, and just tear the thing open.
What I enjoy is on Craig Ferguson, he does the thing where he has the cards or the mail, whatever, when he's reading his email. And he'll read who it's from, and then he'll hold it up to the camera as if to show that it's a legitimate email. And just as the camera is zooming in, then he puts it back down.
Awesome.
Every single time. And it's never not funny.
What is the thing he did with... What is the name of the bunny that is occasionally at the beginning
God.
Of his program? It's like a really profane...
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the bunny, but I love the bunny.
I'm here at the beginning of the Craig Ferguson program. And it's like a hand puppet bunny who just speaks in increasingly profane torrents of filth.
Yes.
It's just awesome. I've never seen it.
Angry, and he swears.
Oh, man.
Just awesome.
Yeah, it's just great. Hey, speaking of awesome, I think Louis C.K. is here tonight. I could be wrong.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I wasn't prepared for the...
Just knowing he's in my town.
Rib is back.
I didn't... I
love him so much.
Okay, now here's the thing. I don't know that it's tonight, but it's he's going to be at the Aladdin. Drove by, because, you know, I do that thing of looking at the Aladdin,
yeah.
And I only ever get... You know what would suck? What would suck is if you're one of those artists that's on the left-hand side of the marquee, because you can't be seen by anybody except people who are coming from Milwaukee. It really... They don't have money.
You know, we have a influential and highly prized radio program.
It's true.
Here. You know, we should probably get on, like, the PR list.
Yeah.
Well, just for the Aladdin.
Yeah.
Get on their PR list so they can send us, like, who's coming up in the future so we can actually
here's the thing.
Maybe
I'm
interview
I'm on their PR
sometimes.
List. I just don't read it. It arrives, and then I look at it. Well, it's not that I can consciously eschew it. I don't look at it and go, now I will delete it with prejudice. You know, and... I just look at it and I go, yeah, I got to read that one of these days. And then I get distracted by a thing. And it does never happen. It's like, because I get that. Well, you know how it is. There's always just, I mean, I'm not complaining, but this is, you live in Portland, there's always like some damn thing happening. And so it's like we get that. I get the, Powell's sent one. It's like, here are all the authors coming to town, which we got Dave Mustaine and whatever.
Would you forward me those when you think about it?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll set it up to do like it. Well, I won't forward it. I'll tell science to forward it.
Okay.
I'll set up an auto forward.
Thank you.
Like I do with some of the entertainment. Because otherwise it'll just sit there and I'll go like, I got to remember to forward that to Dawn. And then immediately, like, it'll fall out of my head. And I'll never... Like, I am such a slave. I was thinking this last night, actually. Because, you know, I've switched from the paper to-do list to the iPhone to-do list. And I went through... And the only reason I don't feel like a schmuck about this... You just did... That's like twice. You've done the...
McRib is back.
You and every.
That was not, I didn't intake. I just
now. Oh no!
See, look.
Just now, you use
to-do list on my iPhone.
That's the little. That's the notepad program
yeah,
on there, right?
Where
it looks like a legal pad.
I haven't figured out what, like, to-do program to get yet, so I'm just still using the little notepad.
I got to say two things here. One, every time I drive by the McDonald's on Powell now, there's a sign up front that actually does say on the top of the building,
McRib is back.
And I smile every single time. Also, the only reason I don't feel like a chump for being on my third to-do like task list program for the iPhone is because like my planner, you know, even like the generic, like it's not generic, I guess. I mean, it's like from, I don't know, it's from like the at-a-glance company or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's from Kmart or something, but I mean, but that, you know, but it's not like a Franklin Covey system. But that cost me like $14.99. I'm on my third app that cost me 99 cents. So, I mean, I, you know, all in all, it's still less than $3. I feel okay about it. But I'm on this one now because I'm old. The to-do list that I'm using now, I swear to Christ, it actually just simulates you're writing it on paper. That's it. It's just like, and it actually says, that is the slogan for it. It just says, like, it's the name of the thing, and then it says, based on paper to-do lists. And I was just like, for Christ, I've just become my grandfather. You know, because you know what that is? That is the jitterbug phone of efficiency applications,
yeah.
Right? Of productivity apps. The one that just makes it seem like I'm writing, which, you know, here's the thing. Is like at my house, a little bit of a breaking news story for you. I have paper at my home, also pens. You know, like I've got the thing. I could do an actual paper and it's bigger. And I could just crumple it up and throw it away. But
this one is just for groceries.
Oh, God.
It's a special one for the groceries.
Is that done with wood paneling?
Well, yeah. You do the thing and you click on it and it starts a new list and you put in your items. But the thing is, I started doing this and my husband was going to the store and I made the list on this. And then I realized, because I was just going to wait in the car while he ran in to get a few things. And I realized if I gave him my phone, then I couldn't play with my phone while he was in the store.
All right.
So screw that.
Okay, here's the thing. Do we have like a ticking clock sound effect or something? We were going to get like a chess clock.
Yeah.
Like a speed chess clock. So that when we started conversations like this, because I can sense the agita in the audience growing every time I go, my iPhone. And let me ask you this. Why is it that people who have an Android phone and do that aren't as irritating? Because, look, I got my iPhone. I love it. It's great. But I'm the first to admit that Apple people are goddamn annoying.
Yeah, I think it's because it's like people who drive like a Prius. There's other kinds of hybrids that aren't that, you know, but it's something specifically about the person who drives a Prius that they just seem smug.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Like with the iPhone. You seem a little smug.
Because Apple people, I mean, as much as I love it, Apple people are just kind of dicks. They're just obnoxious. They're just obnoxious dickweeds. And there's just no getting around that.
And we don't talk about it as if it's like just a phone that, you know, it does good things that a phone should do. We talk about it like, you know, it's a child.
All caps, just as I said that. Just for the love of Christ, you dick, shut up about your iPhone. Here's the thing, sir, or madam. Looking at the name, it's sir, I think. I don't know if you have a smartphone. I'm just saying many of these things we're talking about should be relatable across the board unless you're using... I mean, unless you're just talking on, like, cups and string at home or something.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my... I swear to God, here's the last observation I'm going to make. I mean it, and then we'll move on to the other thing I was going to talk about.
It's not like I'm spending 15 minutes talking about how much trouble I'm having beating a level in Angry Birds.
No, of course not.
And I could.
I admire your self-restraint.
Oh, I could.
I admire the amount of, the amount of discipline you have, too. Because I could do it, too. Anyway, he actually said, this is funny, he actually says his is an iPhone. He said, I own an iPhone, but Jesus, enough. Final observation I'm going to make here is that you know what there is available and which I have and which I use? There is actually a grocery app that you can then link to somebody else's phone. So, like, if I put something on a grocery list, like, it appears on Lara's Android. See? Because,
oh.
You know, it's like an ebony and ivory thing happening at our house.
Yeah.
We're all brothers under the skin. You know, it's like, you know, I am black, she is white. You are blind as a bat, and I have sight. That kind of a thing. And so, yeah, I'll put, like, licorice or something, and it just appears on her phone. So, in any event. All right.
Are you likely to
done.
Put licorice on your...
No, she actually put licorice, but I was taking one for the team there. No,
okay.
It's her. She put licorice. Hey, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you want to join us, the phones are open right now. Wait. Now. There we go. Penis Watch coming up today. Clergy Watch. Corpse Watch. Stupid Criminal of the Week. We got your top five as well. And then, right here, on these softly rustling pieces of paper... I don't know when I'll do this. Maybe sometime in the next half hour or so. But I've got these three really unnerving stories, and they're sort of in escalating levels of unnerving. There's one is an update on a story we had earlier. One is brand new and contains a couple of key phrases. The third is flat out revolting. So what we're going to do is, it's sort of like a, you know, it's like a boiling the frog slowly kind of a thing. We'll get to that.
I have more great news in my stack over here than we can possibly get to in the show. Some days it's like I'm down to nothing.
Right.
And it's like there's nothing left, and it's been a bad news day. I have so many great news, and then we can't possibly do all of them, which makes me sad.
Some days you're on fumes where you're just reading, like, you're honestly just reading about like circuit court decisions in like Broward County that have to do with cat litter or something. I will just say, because I mentioned this during Legion of News, that the story that we're going to lead up to later on in the trio, the trifecta, the hat trick of unnerving stories, contains two phrases. One is, this is from the this is from Deputy Ross Mellinger from his police report. Quote, commenced to undress herself. And it's in West Virginia, so it is said that way. Commenced to undress herself. Close quote. And then later on in the story, the phrase, overwhelming stench. The name of my grindcore band. Oh, there you go. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A man tries to avoid arrest by changing seats in a moving vehicle. A woman threatens a cop with a sex toy. And we have an update on the guy with the mouse in his rectum.
Okay. Da-da-da. Rectum. La-da-da-da-da. By the way, that was the story I was... That was one of my three stories. So that's okay.
Which, the mouse one?
Yeah, the one about the guy and the mouse and the rectum.
Okay.
That's okay. No, it's fine. We'll let you do the updating, and I'll stick with the two left here. All right. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Let's see. By the way, I should have not been surprised by this. Our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakosh, said she gave it the old college try for Louis C.K. He's not doing interviews of any kind, apparently. Because, I mean, why would he need... Why would he need to do interviews? He's Louis C.K. It would suck, though, to be the guys on the other side of the marquee at the Aladdin, because if you're driving down Powell, the only side of the marquee you can see is the side that face, I guess it's like what, north or whatever, the north facing side of the marquee, where I look up and I say, who's coming that I might want to give my money to ticket wise but the other side has like a wholly different set of acts, and it's like I never ever see that. Nobody ever does. The only reason you ever see that is if you're leaving the AM/PM, or if you're coming from like the Book Nook place that's down the street. But Louis C.K. is going
to
be here.
You want to get some cake?
Yeah, I think
there's
like
a really nice bakery up there.
Is it the one that's just called Cake?
No, it's called A Piece of Cake.
Maybe it's the sign out front, though, that just has the word cake with an exclamation mark all over it.
It might.
It just says cake in a circle.
And I would like to say, they make excellent cake.
All right.
And
I don't
like
know where
it.
I was going at this point. I was going somewhere after this, but now it's gone. In any event, so all of that is coming up. Penis Watch, Clergy Watch, Corpse Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. I've got two unnerving stories. We'll get to the top five. Don Taylor's track and the following items as well. How was your evening, Don Taylor?
My evening was great. It was my husband's going out and gaming with his buddies, as my friend Eric Snyder calls it, his geek orgy.
And they don't, because now you said that they don't, they rotate the games they play, but they also rotate the place where they play, right?
No. Well, they did. They have changed it once or twice, but mostly they play at the same place.
It doesn't ever happen at your house, is my point.
No, it never happens at my house.
So, okay, you never have to play host to a bunch of nerds throwing dice.
No, because Patrick's coming from Tualatin, and there's a couple of people that are coming from, like, Vancouver. So they meet at this one guy, Tony's house, who's sort of centralized in Southeast Portland. So he's kind of in between. So, yeah, so, and then... I don't know. It was some important thing. Patrick's been not feeling well, and I tried to convince him actually to stay home and take care of himself, but apparently he had to be here there last night because, I don't know, they were killing the big bad monster finally. And
maybe they're going to be unveiling the Sword of Dakatana.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
And he just, I can't let him down. I promised I'd be there. Cause,
the guild needs me.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So yeah, so... he went off to do that, and it was like, as he was getting ready to leave, I said, okay, I'm going to order a pizza. And he just sort of looked at me.
Did he look
like,
at you like a dog, with like when you set, like, you drop the dog off at the kennel before you go on vacation?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like, he realized he was not going to be there, but there would be pizza. And I was like, see ya.
Did you order a large pizza, or was it just the kind that you could consume in its entirety before he got home?
I went online to, I decided to, rather than I have a couple of options. There's of course Domino's, which is not really a choice. The two main options are either Pizza Hut, which makes a perfectly adequate pizza, or Bellagio's, which makes an excellent pizza, but it's much more expensive and takes a lot longer to get there. So I looked. Pizza Hut has this deal now where you get like two medium pizzas for $6 a piece. And I was like going, okay. So I went online, and the online ordering is awesome because you just push buttons and say, I want this and this and this, and send it to me. So I got a like a pepperoni pizza, and I got one that they call the Hawaiian Luau, which is like a Hawaiian pizza, but it also has bacon.
All right. And by Hawaiian, that's just code for pineapple.
And I don't usually like pineapple on my pizza, but every once in a while, every couple of years, I'll just go, I think I would like, and I ate one slice of that. My husband's going to get the rest of that because it was the rest of it, I just ate pepperoni pizza. But yeah, and I ordered the pizza and it came and I watched like the NBC comedy lineup. I watched, you know, Community and 30 Rock and The Office, and I sat there and ate my pizza. And I mentioned before the show that I'd had pizza. And for some reason, particularly if you're married, this probably isn't very exciting if you live by yourself, but if you're married and you're with somebody like all of the time, there is just something so decadent and so awesome about like the guy coming to the door and you give him the money and you walk back into your apartment and it's your pizza.
Oh, and you don't have to share it with anybody.
You don't have to share it with anyone. There's no one to like look at you and judge you.
Oh, yeah.
You can go, I'll eat one piece now, then I'll come back in a half an hour and eat another piece. You know, it's not meal time.
Yeah.
There's no rules.
Yeah, well, and it's like, and I do this thing too where it's like, I will pay, because I'm a woman apparently, I will pace myself to where I don't eat more than Lara does. So it's like, if she's two slices in, I make sure that I am no more than two slices in. Yeah. Like, I won't get the third one until she does.
And you can only eat half.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is no matter how much of anything is there, you are only allowed to have half of it because there's two of you and everything has to be split.
And
like,
even
perfectly.
If it's over the course of like a day or two.
Right.
Like if there's 12 pieces, this is so true, if you're 12 pieces, like if the pizza has 12 slices and you only have like, so that's six each, if you have like three that night, doesn't matter how much is left the next day, you are allowed only three unless specifically told otherwise, because like the other, because otherwise you get the, hey, where'd the pizza? Hey, half of that was mine, you know, and then there's a whole thing.
Yeah.
The other thing about ordering pizza by yourself is, it's not like Lars a real hard case about there's something, because push comes to shove, pizza's pizza, and you know, like with the exception of the pineapple thing, which is one of the great social dividing lines, that really is like a black licorice yes or no thing, you know, where there's just people who can't abide it and there's people who can and there's never the twain shall meet. But she's not real picky about pizza, but it's like she's still got preferences that are different than mine.
Yeah.
And so it's that thing when you call, and it's like, I'll call the pizza place, and I go like, hey, so I need a pizza, and they'll say, okay, what do you need? And I'll say, and then I have to stop for a second, I have to steel myself, and I say, I need half veggie, which is like, what is the point of that? If you're just getting something that doesn't have, you know, at least one kind of meat on it, it's like, what is the... You're just eating cheese bread at that point. That's all you're eating. You're just eating like you're eating like that crazy bread from Little Caesars that just has cheese melted on top of it. It's not even really a pizza unless there's meat, in my opinion. So I just have to order the half veggie. But if it's like, man, if it's me, yeah, it's just nothing but meat. Just meat followed by meat followed by a third kind of meat.
That's Patrick's preference too. We have the thing where, honestly, if I'm given my choice of any kind of pizza I can have, I tend to like the more gourmet kind of things. So like with Bellagio's, they have something that's called like the Garden Goddess or something. I don't know. It's all vegetable stuff, except I'll order that with chicken added to it. And it's like the not tomato sauce, but it's like the creamy...
Like a white sauce.
The creamy garlic sauce.
Like
and
a
then
pesto
it has,
or something.
Yeah, and it has like roasted garlic and artichoke hearts and chicken. That's my preference. Like they have a... thing called the quattro formaggi at Pizzicato, which is basically just like four kinds of cheese and like roasted garlic and stuff and basil. I love that. Patrick's idea of a pizza is to get the kind that has every sort of meat that they have in the store.
Well, let's be clear about something. I don't really care because, I mean, pizza is a very individualized thing. That's a matter of one's personal preference, and it has to do with, you know, that's, your pizza. What you love in a pizza is like what you love in a person. You know, it's not my place to judge, and everybody's different and whatever. But you do, with your thing of like where it is like a white sauce or a pesto sauce, and it's got eggplant, and you know, it's like you have to ask yourself at what point you are no longer eating a pizza. Like, at what point is it a totally different food that you are just calling a pizza? And it's like, I don't really care enough to get bogged down in figuring out what the answer to that is. But I just, yeah, I think I'm just much more basic. Like, the whole thing about the gourmet pizza, and I maybe it's like some weird reverse prejudice that I've got, where the gourmet pizza place, it makes me sort of angry when I see like when I'll look at a gourmet pizza restaurant and I kind of squint my eyes. Like, there's one up the street from me. Is it Pizzicato, maybe?
I don't know.
Is it up on Division?
Yeah.
There's a place not too far from here where it's like, you know, and you can just tell by the font and the sign and the kind of people that are going there. It's like every now and again, because Laura has much more.
Pizza.
See, and I'm not disputing, you know what? And I'm not disputing that. And I'm saying there's nothing wrong with that. But I think I do have I have a kind of a real class thing in terms of pizza. Because I think I look at that as, you know what it is? It's like the pizza that has the eggplant and, like, what is this? Well, it's crumbled goat cheese that I put on top of my... And the chicken, which is not as bad, but I don't get that either. But it's like when people have an alleged pizza that is that... It's like some really, really great neighborhood where the white man has come and he's just ruined everything by just putting up, like, one P.F. Chang's after another. And then, like, stores that sell $19 bars of soap. And they're each wrapped in rice paper and they're each put on a blonde wood table on which nothing else sits. And where there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of, like, Sarah McLachlan or something. Or there's a lot of the, who's the chick that married Elvis Costello? Not Diana Krall.
Diana Krall.
No, I'm thinking of somebody else then. Oh. Who did the Sail Away album? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because I just saw her on an episode of House the other day, of course.
It's kind of like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But it's just that. Where it's like, it's, you know, you go in and you just look and you go, I think there are extra zeros on this washcloth. It says that it's $75 or something. And it turns out that it's like, no, a Sherpa had to go to the top of some mountain in some goddamn place and get to bring the wool back and whatever. That is what I associate those pizza places with. That being said, you know, whatever. It's a big world. I'm just, pizza's like, I was going to say, and this is actually a great segue. This brings us back to the beginning. Then we'll get to the news. This brings us back to the beginning where I talked about how it's ridiculous that I have, like, an iPhone app to keep track of my tasks because I got pens and paper. Your choice of pizza is kind of like your choice of pens, because you're on that whole thing with the pen that you use because I first introduced it to you. I don't even know. Is it a Uniball or is it a Cigna? What
it's
is the name of that?
It's a Cigna.
A Cigna?
A Uniball Cigna.
Which is actually, it's a great, and it's a mark of my personality that I remembered the name and the model of the pen that you use. Mm-hmm. It's a great pen, but when you press down too hard, it kind of explodes because the tip presses and the back flies off of it.
Yeah, so you can't do the... With the point out.
Because it comes apart. Because the whole thing will just, the back of it shoots off like it's rocket propelled.
But I don't, as a rule, do that. But I did occasionally have a problem with the clicky thing sometimes.
I will tell you that I use the Pilot Precise V5 Black RT, which is what I've used forever. And it's the pen that I've used forever and a day. I drifted away, every now and again to try something else. And I always came back to this pen. It used to just come with the cap. Now it comes with the clickable end or whatever. So I go to the office supply store yesterday because I had to buy a toner for my printer at home, which is, by the way, $62 goddamned. No, I did not buy ink for here because Bruce has done that and he got it at the discount ink place.
Okay.
I just got to pick it up.
Okay.
So, and I don't want to. And I just don't want to let them just give me some sort of, like, quill based raping, where I go in there, and this.
Yeah.
I mean. I know I'm like the skillionth guy to talk about the price of toner, but it's that thing that you sort of forget until you go in to get it. And then it all comes flooding back like some sort of Vietnam, PTSD symptom. Where I look down and I go, wait, it's 60. Well, that doesn't make any sense. And then I'm looking at the box to see if, like, maybe they're selling me, like, four at once or something. And, of course, they're not. Anyway, so I had to stop at the office supply store. And while I'm there, I'm on my last couple of Pilot pens. So I go over to the pen section. And they've done this thing at Office Depot, which I think is now the only substantive office supply place that exists. Because I think they consumed Office Max, I think.
Well,
or Staples or something.
I think they're still... They consumed Office Max, but they're still Staples.
There's a couple of them merged. But it's like around here, there's just, like, the Office Depot. There's the one on 82nd. There's one downtown. And there's one on MLK. And I don't know where else there is to buy, office supplies, like, in bulk. Unless I want to go to, like, Fred Meyer or something, where it's way too expensive. Anyway, the point is, I don't know what sort of back... handed chicanery is going on between the people at, like, Papermate and the people at the Uniball company, who I am now looking askance at. There's some sort of backroom smoke-filled deal going on, some sort of Boardwalk Empire thing happening between those makers of writing implements and the office supply companies, because the Pilot Pen Company, which has been making Rick Emerson's writing implements for the better part of two decades now in his career as a talk radio performer and dancing monkey, you go now to the office depot, and there's not even, like, a section. Because, you go to the pen thing, and it's like the wall of pens, and they're all hanging there, and they're hung up by company. First, the Pilot section started to shrink. Then the last time I went, it was like they weren't even hanging the Pilot pens up there. The Pilot pens were dead. They were then down on the shelves below the hanging pens.
So, like, they're not greasing the palms at office depot.
But now it's not even that. Now it's not even like they're hanging on the top and it's not like on the shelves below. Now, I swear to God, there is a single tray of Pilot pens. And they're not... And not this kind, by the way. And it's like the kind where you get, like, 10 for a dollar, which are the ones that nobody wants.
So what kind of, is that again?
Well, this is the Pilot Precise V5 RT Ultrafine Black. which is what I use. Now, I can buy them online, but it's just not the, it's not, it's not the same thing. It's just not the, you know, there's a whole experience to going and you pick up the box, a feel of a good solid box of pens in your hand, and you buy it. That's why I don't charge the company for it. I just buy it with my own money because there's a certain sort of ritual involved there. But now it's onto a single little tray underneath in the shelving area below all the pens, and the rest of it is just nothing but Uniball pens. So I'm just saying, yeah, I'm on to you.
Yeah, you can buy a box of a dozen of those pens on Amazon for $22.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not that it's the principle of it. I just don't, because it's not like anybody's really dissatisfied with these pens, and I don't really know anybody who's all that attached to using something by Uniball. There seems to be no logic dictating this decision, which is why I smell the heavy hand of graft and corruption at work.
Also, it's very frustrating when you go into a store that is that big and has that many products on display, and the one stinking thing that you come to get, when it which is usually not something that's terribly, you know, rare and hard to find.
Right.
And that's the thing that they've just decided not to stock for some reason.
Sons of bitches. That's right. I'm just saying, someday there's going to be a tallying up, an adding, and a reckoning. And next will crack.
Someday there'll be a small airless room with you and the CEO of Office Depot.
That's right. We're going to have ourselves a chat is what we're going to have. All right. At the news desk, make way for Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Norah Jones. That's who it is.
Okay.
That's what I always picture playing in the gourmet pizza place, is Norah Jones records.
She didn't do that Sail Away song. That Sail Away song, at least the one I'm thinking of, isn't that some, like, Norwegian chick with one name or something?
Well, there's Styx, and then there's somebody else that's in Christopher Cross.
I think of the one that they used for the Carnival Cruise ads or something. Sail Away, Sail Away.
Oh, that's Enya.
That's Enya, yeah.
Yeah, that song is called Orinoco Flow, Don.
Yeah. I was surprised to find out that was an actual pop song, because I'd always just heard it in a commercial.
Yeah.
And I thought it was for the advertisement.
I own numerous records by Enya. Never said be okay with that.
That's nice.
Okay.
We have an actual snuff watch.
Oh, really?
To do.
I didn't know that. Is it somebody of note?
It is indeed.
Really? Is it somebody that I know?
It is.
Is it going to make me sad or happy?
I don't know.
Let me just ask three more here. Somebody from television?
No.
Somebody from movies?
Yes.
Actor?
No.
Well, I think that's my three questions.
That was
damn, fail. All right, here's your snuff watch for Friday. Rick Emerson radio program. Is Dawn Taylor with your snuff watch.
Dino De Laurentiis,
the
Oscar-winning auteur of classic New Wave cinema and producer of films ranging from Serpico to Barbarella.
King Kong!
Died Wednesday night in Los Angeles. His family has announced he was 91.
90? Wow, good for him.
The producer's daughter, Raffaella De Laurentiis, said in a statement her father was surrounded by family when he died Wednesday night at his home in Beverly Hills. She did not give a cause of death. The Italian icon may be best known for his collaborations with directors Roberto Rossellini and Federico Fellini, whose La Strada and Knights of Cabrera earned him Oscars for Best Foreign Film. His career spanned hundreds of films, including several Oscar winners, and he worked with some of the biggest stars and best directors in the business. His credits include box office and or critical successes such as U-571, War and Peace, Ragtime, 3 Days of the Condor, and Blue Velvet. The Academy Award-winning Serpico in 1973 with Al Pacino was his Hollywood debut, but by then he already had two Italian-made Oscar winners. He was one of the first producers to understand the box office potential of foreign audiences and helped invent international co-productions, raising money by pre-selling distribution rights outside North America.
91, though. I mean, that's, you know... that's a respectable age to which you live.
Yeah.
And he seemed like a good guy. I never heard anybody talk smack about him. Yeah. Not like what's his name, the Chinatown guy.
When my monkey die, everybody cries.
Well done. Because that's what he did the Jessica Lange King Kong.
Yes,
right?
He did. Yeah.
Who was the guy? I keep wanting to say Robert Townsend, but that's the Hollywood Shuffle guy. The kid stays in the picture.
Robert Evans.
Robert Evans, who just, you know, seems brilliant, but also like just a huge raging dick.
Yeah.
Just a guy who's just coked out of his mind all the time and like making fantastic films and then like slapping hookers with the other, you know, with the back of his hand. But Dino De Laurentiis, he seemed like a decent sort. I didn't know he produced Serpico. That's a I mean, and what was the other film you said right in the open there?
3 Days of the Condor.
3 Days of the Condor.
Fellini's La Strada.
I mean, you know, some guys, you go their whole life and you produce, you know, they produce one great groundbreaking influential film.
And his King Kong movie, actually, I think, was really, really misunderstood. It's a film, it bombed at the box office. People really disliked it. It's not a bad movie, and it really has some depth to it. Honestly, I think it's a better film than what's his
Jackson's?
Name? Peter Jackson's. It's a better Kong.
I don't think I've seen the what is it, 77, whenever that came out?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that King Kong for, God, a year, 20 years probably. I mean, it's been forever since I've seen it. I don't remember anything about it. I remember almost nothing. Except for the one shot where they had where Jessica Lange is in the giant, you know, animatronic, the mechanical hand or whatever. And that's because I was so young and it was a cool special effects shot. But I don't think I remember anything about it. I don't remember liking it or disliking it. It is actually, in a way, maybe unfairly, maybe I should see it again. It's funny you say this because I was just thinking about this last night for some reason. I was thinking about Peter Jackson's King Kong, which, while a nice looking film and well made, like, made no impact, I think, on me or really on society as a whole.
No,
it just sort of went, look at that, and then it was gone.
Yeah, the effects were gorgeous. It wasn't until, like, long after I saw the movie that I realized almost all of it was shot on a soundstage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it takes place, like, on an island, and they're running around in the jungle, and almost all of that is, like, green screen work. And it's beautiful. It's flawless. But the movie itself is just...
It's pointless.
Curiously soulless.
Yeah, well, and it's just... And it just doesn't seem to be any reason for it to exist. Yeah. I mean, except that it's Peter Jackson's. It was like a whole passion project for him and whatever. And it was like a labor of love because he loves that movie. And which is fine. And at the very least, he didn't, like, sully it. You know, he did, like, a respectful remake. It's, like, a really good cover version that, you know, you don't really need, but that it's, you know, it's good. I should go back and watch the 70s one again. I haven't seen that forever. What was I going to watch? I made a mental note to watch something the other day. Oh, it wasn't that. Oh, God. No, I'm sorry. I don't even mean to lump the two together. It wasn't that at all. It was that movie where Rosie Grier... is actually put in the body.
The man with two brains.
Yeah, where it's like Rosie Grier and a white man are, they're stuck in the same body together. And it's because Laura and I watched this documentary of the 50, like, you know, the 50 money losingest films ever made or something.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I knew, like, numbers like 50 through, like, you know, 4. And then, but, like, the, you know, and the number one was like Plan 9 from Outer Space or something. But, like, numbers 2 and 3, I'd never heard of. I forget what number 2 was. It was some Roger Corman film, but the third money losingest film of all time was this thing with Rosie Grier, where it's like Rosie Grier and
Ralph, what's his name? Yeah,
I don't know, you know, the white guy, you know, the two men, one body, and then it's like all of these terrible, terrible special effects, where it's like,
well, it was about a racist white man who, to save his life, his head gets grafted onto the body of a black guy.
Is that the deal? That it's not the other way around? Is that the setup?
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, the effects, you know, there was no budget for any kind of effect.
No, it's like two guys in a big shirt, like, sticking their head out.
Yeah, and so in some scenes, it's like one is standing behind the other with its head sticking out. In some scenes, it's like Rosie Grier with, like, this
mannequin
head, like, glued to his shoulder.
It looked so great. It just looked awesome. I'm like, we got to see that. But they made mention of a lot of other films that, you know, did not make back their investment and whatever. And this De Laurentiis' King Kong was one of them. So I don't know. Maybe I'll pay a visit to Movie Madness at some point in the next few days. I got to figure out what that movie's called. Rosie Grier thing. It looked so great. All right. So there you go. So Dino De Laurentiis dead at the age of 71. There goes your snuff watch for Friday.
The movie you're thinking of is The Thing with Two Heads from 1972 with Rosie Grier and Ray Milland.
It seems like an unimaginative title. Seems like they could have done, like, if that movie came out now, you know, that they'd have a much better way to market and title that.
And it says that Rick Baker was in it. So I'm
Rick
wondering
Baker,
if
the effects artist?
I'm wondering if it was Rick Baker, the effects artist, who's actually...
Rick Baker of Rawhead Rex fame?
Yeah, in the film.
Wow. Hmm. All right. By the way,
apparently, yes, it was him. He was in the thing with... brains.
Is that like how Tom Savini is in Creepshow or something?
Yeah, quite possibly.
What else is Tom Savini in? When did I just see him the other day?
He shows up in zombie movies all the time.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he was in. Was he in?
He was in Machete.
That's where it was. I was watching Machete.
Yeah.
And Tom Savini, who I love, who's just awesome. By the way, if you're a Tom Savini fan, and I know you are, there's a great documentary called Fantastic Flesh that just came out, which is a documentary all about him and the rise of the practical effects artist and what he does now. Do you know he runs like his own special effects college for kids, young folk? It's awesome. And they just show these kids in class where it's like you have to, and it's not like a thing where like anybody can get in, like you have to show him some acumen in terms of you have to demonstrate proficiency with modeling and three-dimensional drawing and the whatever. And then literally Tom Savini is like the professor at your class, and then you have a semester-end project where it's like you have to demonstrate, you have to show them a concept of some special effect that you're going to create and execute, and then you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they're like, well, this is a nine-headed hydra, and it's like its eyes all pop out and spray blood, and then it explodes at the end. And he's like, okay, you got 3 months, and like that's the end of semester project.
Yeah, speaking of Rick Baker actually may still, I don't know how old he is. He used to do that. He taught these classes in special effects makeup and stuff through a cosmetology school in Los Angeles. And when I interviewed Guillermo del Toro when Blade 2 came out, one of the things we were talking about is asking about, you know, his entree into movies, because he started as a makeup and effects guy. And yeah, he had, as a teenager, he had started like helping out doing makeup and stuff on movies around Mexico, around his town. And then he went to Los Angeles and went to specifically take these classes from Rick Baker to learn how to do like professional monster effects makeup and stuff.
It really is. Yeah, it's great. I strongly recommend that. So forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Why, speaking of Mexico, Don, you know, in Mexico, they sometimes speak English like you and I, but sometimes they do not. Sometimes they speak Spanish.
Español?
Español. That's it. I don't understand that. I don't get the whole deal of why things have to have different, like the names of countries and languages. Those should be universal, right? Like, if it's called Espanol there, like, it should be called Espanol here. Like, what is...
Well, Spain is España.
Right, but why do we... That's what I'm saying. Like, why do we have to come up with our own name for España?
I don't know.
Why do we have to call Deutschland Germany? Like, I can't remember a two-syllable word somehow.
Yeah, in some cases where it's like España, we say Spain. Okay, you can kind of... Some cases, country names are so different in their native tongue than what we call them. You just kind of go, how did that happen?
It just doesn't make any sense. That seems like a little bit of, and I'm not saying Americans are the only one to do it, but that seems like we ought to, you know, like we could meet them halfway, it seems like. All right, we're not even. Hey, speaking of halfway, so, you know, my wife just went to, she went to Turkey, and then she went to Spain, then Italy, then back to Spain, then, I don't know, somewhere else, and then home, and then whatever. All I care about is she brought back the Michael Jackson mask, which, incidentally, oh my God, I got to take a photo of this. So I don't know if you know this or not, but at home, one of the, I don't know how to say this, like a culture. I was going to say objets d'art, whatever. Mm-hmm. One of the art things in my house.
Yeah.
It's not really art so much as it's crap, but it's this huge bust of JFK that is one of the first things we ever bought together. We bought it at a Goodwill for like a dollar. And it's been a token of our love ever since. And so it just has gone from house to house with us. And it's this huge, I mean, it's like massive. It's like three times larger than life bust of JFK on like, you know, and it's got the whole thing, got the wooden... It's basically like one of the heads in the jar from Futurama, but it's on like a whole wooden base, and he's looking proudly toward the future. And then, I swear to God, it's an accident, but at one point I was moving the bust of JFK from one room to another, and I whacked it into a wall, and the back of his head just came off, and I just felt so bad. And then I spent days fixing that because I thought people would think it was intentional. So bad. It was like I went, and it fell off. And, oh, God! Oh, the humanity. Anyway... What was my point? Oh, so it's in my office at home, but now... And so we used to do this thing, like it was in the living room. We used to do this thing of decorating the JFK bust for the appropriate holiday. Like I would put... heart-shaped, you know, dealy bobs on his head for, like, Valentine's Day. And then we put, like, reindeer things on him from the Grinch for Christmas. But he's not in the living room anymore. He's in my office. So now I've just put the Michael Jackson mask on him, and it's just so unbelievably freaking freaky. It's just, Lara can't even – she can't even come in the office. She just, like, stands out and, like, holds her hand up. She's like, turn that thing away. I'll get a photo of it and bring it in.
Oh, please.
So she got that in in Barcelona. But, it, you know, it's a point of pride with her that when she goes to another country, she, even if she can't really do it, she makes the attempt to speak the language because she feels like otherwise you're just some other dick American. You know, and I mentioned her friend Michelle, who just says, you know, like, how much for the beads or something. You know, but Lara's very conscious about saying the, you know, like, donde es, you know, wow, or you know, yo tener, blah, 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 pesos or whatever it is, euros. And then the guy usually just goes like, oh, okay, Whitey, yeah, nice, nice try. Yes, it's $7. But, you know, but it's important to her that she try because, you know, she seems respectful and also because, you know, it's like any other muscle. You know, the more you use it, the better you're going to get at it. The more you speak Spanish, the more you attempt to learn another language, the more you try to use it in conversation, the better you're going to get. So that's how they teach things at Castalia Language Center. They, you know, they have you use it in conversation because, I mean, if you ever ask yourself, like, well, why can't, like, a three-year-old, you know, learn to speak some foreign language? Or why, you know, kids are like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, they can, you know, be bilingual with no issue. I mean, you know, frankly, when you're younger, you just pick those things up a little faster. But also because they don't, you know, they're not showing a kid a chart of prepositions. They're just talking to him in some language, and the kid just learns it. That's how it works. So that's what they do at Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. 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 You could do far worse than to learn Spanish just as an exercise for keeping your brain sharp and active as well. And plus, you know, Spanish is a massively useful language. You're going to become more so. So there you go. You find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Please tell me you heard about it here. Castalia Language Center. Let's do like one more here. We'll take a little break. Come back on the other side. We got more to come, including your top five, your penis watch, clergy watch, corpse watch, stupid criminal. I mean, it's just endless. We'll never get to it all. No. Here's Don Taylor.
An Illinois woman has been charged after she allegedly threatened an officer Tuesday with what police called a, quote, rigid female pleasure device.
Let me get rid of my second story of the three that I was going to read. No, that's fine.
Aww.
I'm left with one. Hold on. Hold on. Let me just... There's some entertainment that I crafted for today. Oh, wait. Hold on. Here's the...
Would you like to...
No. Here's the story you read earlier.
I feel like you're punishing me for being Johnny on the spot with my news gathering, which is my job.
No, I'm not at all. I'm just saying I should have known. I am at fault. I am to blame. I should have anticipated that you would be way ahead of the curve on this, that I would be late to the party with this. I hold now onto this one story.
I don't have anything that involves stench, so if that's it, then...
All right. Does it involve a knife? You don't have a story involving a knife, do you?
No.
Okay. All right, I'm going to seal this and put it over here. All right, I have this one story left. This is sort of like, you know, it's like the winning the one for the Gipper, where you just got one play left. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Carolee Bildson, 56, of Gurnee, Illinois, was charged with one misdemeanor count of aggravated assault and theft of labor. She allegedly walked out on a tab at Joe's Crab Shack on Tuesday. An officer was told by a restaurant employee that Bildston came into the restaurant, ordered dinner and wine, then went outside and sat on a bench. Police were called because Bildston had apparently skipped out on a restaurant bill 2 weeks prior. Bildston was found near Six Flags Great America, lying in the grass on the south side of Grand Avenue. An officer spoke to her, and she told him she was okay. She appeared to be intoxicated, and the officer told her she had to pay her bill. When she said she had money at her apartment and could pay the bill, an officer escorted her to her nearby residence. Once there, she walked into her bedroom, opened a dresser drawer, and reached inside and removed a clear, rigid, feminine pleasure device and held it over her head, approaching the officer in a threatening manner. The officer knocked the device out of the way before he could be hit and placed her under arrest.
Jesus. And so she got the feminine pleasure device from where?
From her bedroom dresser drawer.
I just wanted to make sure that I heard that correctly. It wasn't like from a sealed package that had never been opened or from, you know, like a sterilization chamber where it had been cleaned.
Right. No.
And she's an unattractive woman.
Yeah, she is.
She looks weathered. She has some miles on her.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not going to post the mugshot because really we've got the best mugshot in the history of the world at the website. Let's do one more here.
Okay.
And I think you've got this. Do you have the story about the collapsing tower?
Yes.
I'm almost certain I handed that to you.
You did.
Because the visual aid, have you watched the visual aid?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I did.
How great is that? Seriously, everybody in the history of all things, you must go here now. Please, everyone, to do this. Go to rickemerson.com/pictures. And I know the link says photos. I'll change that at some point. But it's pictures. RickEmerson.com/pictures. Or just go to RickEmerson.com. Click where it says pictures, photos. It's RickEmerson.com/pictures. You go to visual aids for November 12th, 2010. I'm actually going to go there right now and just watch this as you read this story. It is so great. I watched this probably 15 times last night. It's just awesome. It'll take a second to load when you go there, but it's called Demolition Fail. Listener George sent this to us. It is so great.
Yeah, a smokestack was being demolished in an old power plant, and it toppled in the wrong direction after they exploded it. It sent spectators scrambling before knocking down two 12,000-volt power lines and crashing into a building which housed backup generators. I said no injuries were reported. The smokestack was 275 feet high. As the story was, because I read the story yesterday, it did knock out power to something like 4,000 houses. And the thing to tell you is that when you watch the video, you will see like children in the foreground.
Screaming.
And you hear them screaming because the families, apparently the families of the people who own the demolition company, brought their kids to watch them like bring down the big smokestack, which then goes in completely the wrong direction and takes out power lines at a building.
It is so great. And it's like, and I should stress first of all that no one was hurt, no one was injured, no one was killed. So it's okay to laugh at the children's pain here because no one was actually harmed physically. But they're standing under power lines, and I guess to their credit, they thought the thing was going to fall the other way.
Right.
But it hits the power lines, and the power lines are there. Whoosh, 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 thing where they just like, and they come right at the camera.
Yeah. Well, I just saw Piranha 3D.
Oh, yeah.
And that one chick gets completely like sliced in half when that happens.
I was so hoping one of them would hit the camera. The photo that I, the video that I posted, which you can watch on, it's called Demolition Fail here. They show it from two angles. The thing about watching it from the second angle is it's like, you know, guys watching it from like a, I don't know, like an observatory or something. They're far away and they're on the walkie talkies like this. But the best part is at the very end, a guy goes, yeah, it fell the wrong way. And like it's the whole, let me just, you can get a sense of the sound. And then it goes through the cables, and then I think it's the transformers explode. You can actually, it sounds like thunder, which I guess it kind of is, but the transformers actually explode. Let me just, all right. I'm sorry.
Eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, fire!
And then it's not moving at all. Oh no. It's the wrong way, he shouts. Oh, worst demolition ever. Oh, it's so great. Things continue to explode through a huge... Okay, and then you get to see this from across the way. This is like from a... I don't know. This is, looks like they're up on a mountain or something watching it. By the way, this second fall, which almost looks like it's in slow motion, is awesome. And then you'll hear the guy at the end go, wrong way. Awesome. Right into, and it just goes right.
He seems so calm. That went the wrong way.
Yeah, and it's like from up there, he can't tell if anybody's been hit, maimed, killed, crushed, squashed, reduced. Doesn't matter. It's just, he's just, you know, he's all about the facts. I love the internet. I have no idea. God, our lives must have sucked before the internet. I mean, because really, I mean, without the internet, think about even like before VCRs. You know, like if they show that once on the news, because the news isn't going to show a video every night.
You couldn't watch the exploding whale over and over and over again.
You had to wait every year for Paul Lemon to go, hey, here's a whale, bam. And then it's like, and if you missed it, you know, I mean, even in the era of VHS, if you missed it, you're screwed unless you have a friend who like gives you a copy of it or something. That's just so great. So you can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures. That is rickemerson.com/pictures. All right. We'll do this on the other side. We will come back. We've got... We got your news continuing with your penis watch, your clergy watch, corpse watch, all of that on the way. The stupid criminal of the week. We'll try to get to this top five and more. By the way, just real quickly, look, it has nothing. I will tell you, actually, that when listener George sent this along, he said, He said, hey, you can use this in your copy for CJ's High Climbing. You know, you don't want to hire the wrong guy to do the job because then it squashes, you know, power lines and substations. And then he followed up like 5 seconds later by saying, my God, you could always use this to talk about Squire's Electric. Look at those cables. I have no idea what is actually exploding there in the shot or like what it is that. But you, also when you watch that, if you watch it from the first angle especially, you can actually see as the cables are severed like a sort of. It's like a flashbang grenade or something going off, like a really bright light. And then here's the creepy thing, or the creepier thing, or one of the many, many creepy things about it, is that you can see the flash, and then it's actually a second or two later before you hear the noise. Because I think it's like, because the flash is going at the speed of light.
Right.
And everything else is going at the speed of sound. And so it's like you hear it before you, or you see it before you hear it, or something like that. Maybe. Mm. I guess that's what they talk about. They talk about if there were to be a meteor that were to strike the Earth or just some massive explosion. Like, the sky would go really, really dark and there'd be a blinding flash of light, but you would never really be able to figure out why. Because you wouldn't hear the noise associated with it until after your ears have been burned off. So, these things aren't likely to happen to you at home using, like, a toaster or something. I mean, admittedly. Unless you're Dawn, who, you know, apparently just sticks silver. I'm going to tell that to Joe Squires, by the way. And if you want to call me a tattletale, that's fine, but I'm going to do it. Because I can't just show up someday and you come in and you got no legs.
I know all he's going to do is just go, don't ever do that.
He's going to roll his eyes. No, you know what he's going to do? He's just going to call home and go, like, we're going to get ourselves a swimming pool next year. No, it's Dawn Taylor. She's always sticking a fork in the toaster. No, no, no. We're going to be out there within 6 months. I guarantee it. Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. There's no job too small, no job too large. And when I say no job too large, I mean they literally have done things like, you know, doing serious, hardcore, industrial power work. It's not just where, like, they come to your house because, like, your ceiling fan is making, like, a weird grinding, clankety noise or something. Or just, like, you're not quite sure that you put the bolts in the right place or whatever. I mean, they've done a lot of industrial work for businesses, for buildings, for huge, you know, for factories that really need, I mean, like, serious hardcore amounts of power coming into the place, and they need it to work. They need it to be stable. You know, but they can also come to your house. They can also deal with residential issues. And as they always say, you know, even if they're not able to get the permanent fix done that day, and they usually can, but even if they can't, they're going to make sure it's working when they leave, and they'll be back the next day right at it, making sure that permanent fix is in as soon as possible. Your house isn't going to be a disaster when they leave. They do follow up to make sure your experience was satisfactory. And, you know, frankly, let's be honest, just call a spade here. They support the Rick Emerson Show. Bam. End of story. QED. Enough said. So you contact them at 503-252-1609. Please tell me you heard it on the Rick Emerson Show, won't you please?
Mm-hmm.
503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. By the way, a couple people just emailed and texted and asked what that last song was. That was Mekong. That is by a song called Mekong off the album Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy by The Refreshments, who are now essentially, you know, for all intents and purposes, they are now Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, who are going to be at Verbodies tonight. So I'm just saying, if you like the sound of that, you really got to catch Roger Klein and the Peacemakers tonight at Verbodies. Joining us now in the studio, Mr. Big Jim Whitlick. Hello.
Hello.
Sir. How are you, my friend?
Not too bad. The Refreshments, they're the ones that did the King of the Hill theme, right?
Yes, they did. Well done. Well remembered. Which they actually will. There's this sort of. There's this sort of thing that every time you see Roger Clymer, it's like it's always a little bit of a guessing game as to what song are they going to coda with the King of the Hill theme, which they always tag onto something.
Nice.
So they'll play like, you know, Bandidos, or they'll play, you know, Americana or some other song, and they'll end it with a big rave up, and then suddenly it just transmogrifies into that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, which just puts the biggest, dumbest smile on my face. I don't know why, even just doing it now. But there's something about being in a room of like hundreds of just drunken maniacs while a band on stage just plays and they're just selling it. I mean, going for it, playing the King of the Hill theme, like, for all they're worth.
Because it universally makes you a redneck. Like, whether you're rich or poor or whatever, you are a redneck. You're like, yeah, I want an Alamo. Let's get this done.
It's like Kennedy standing not at the Berlin Wall, but at a wall, like, between Mexico and Texas, going, I say to you today, I am a redneck. Bum-ba-dum-ba-bum-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Yo,
Tango
Solo.
Man. I'm sorry, we just did two different things there. Mr. Jim Whitlick joining us in the studio, comedy impresario.
Thank you. Yes.
And in just a moment, so we mentioned this last week when we were talking to you. You are kind of a student of comedy, and you're a guy who's, like a lot of us, you've spent a lot of time not only doing the thing, but also studying the thing.
Absolutely.
And fascinated by the thing. Just like we do, we have a recurring feature here called The Greatest Songs Ever Made, and we have another feature called Pop Culture Authority, where we look at the history and the underpinnings of things. And we're going to unveil a new feature today called Humor Me Comedy 101 that we will begin in just one moment. It's called Humor Me Comedy 101, which is where you will give us an overview of a particular comedian or a particular comic work or a record, sometimes all of them intersecting.
Yes. Basically, an overview that you know, you can analyze. You can hear a comic and you know that it's funny because you laugh. But what we'll do is basically analyze one particular comic and pull apart the inner workings in such a way so as to show you why you laugh, not just, you know, the fact that it's funny.
So in just a moment, Mr. Big Jim Willig with Humor Me Comedy 101, Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Friday.
Well, we have a man who tries to avoid arrest by changing the seats in his vehicle. And we do have an update on the man with the mouse in his rectum. And wow, we got a penis watch, we got a corpse watch. We don't have enough time.
We
for
should
all
do
this
the
stuff.
Update on the mouse, the man with the mouse in his rectum, just right now, so we get it done.
Okay.
And then what I'm going to do is, and by the way, just for those of you who are playing the Rick Emerson home game, I don't mean to bring up old stuff, but this is a comment from a listener. This is not Rick Emerson saying this. You understand? This is me reading something that a listener opined. It says, "Hey, is your news made of McRib? Because Don's just trashing all of it today. Ha, ha, ha." So of the three stories that I pulled that were just awkward and horrible and off-putting and stomach-churning and wonderful for all those reasons, Don had gotten to two of them, and I swear to God, just now during the break, she's like, "Hey, did you see the story about—" and you read the first line. I'm like, "No!" And I just diving in front of it like I was stopping an assassin's bullet trying to get you to close it. Because that's— that. Leave me my dreams, at least. And this one story. So I have this one story that I will get to here in just a bit. In fact, I'm going to label it Rick's one remaining disturbing story. This, however, is a follow-up on a story that we had earlier this week.
Yes. Earlier this week, we spoke about the fellow who was tased and beaten up by the cops at the hospital. They found a mouse in his rectum. He, of course, was determined to have been on some sort of hallucinogenic drug and claimed that he didn't know what had happened to him. Someone had called the police saying that there was a burglary in process. When the police arrived, there was—
Have you heard this story?
I have not.
When the police arrived, there was a naked man face down in the person's home. And he just went crazy and started fighting them, and they tased him. That didn't help. They beat him with a baton. That didn't help. They ended up putting a blanket over his head so that he wouldn't bite them.
Oh, my God.
And they got him to a hospital emergency room, and x-rays found that he had a mouse in his rectum.
And so then lots of conversation ensued about, was the mouse dead? Was the mouse alive? Because you got to figure, if the mouse is alive, he's fighting. But on the other hand, if the mouse is dead, unless he's been dead for some time or frozen, he's a little spongy. And it's hard to— you called it like trying to F somebody with a sweat sock, basically. And, you know, so it was like, well, how did he have somebody— you know, was it like a goatsy thing where he has like a guy on either side kind of, you know, kind of clearing the tunnel, you know, and then somebody else is putting the backhoe in to the thing?
Some doozers building a supporting structure.
I think we have an answer, though.
Right. The story came out through the Smoking Gun, who had looked at the police report. And the police report had said on it that a physician noticed a mouse could hanging from male subject's rectum. X-ray showed part of the mouse was lodged in the male subject's rectum. A police representative has cleared this up with the Smoking Gun and told them that the word could was a typo and should have read cord. It was a computer mouse that he had in his rectum.
Oh, that's so much more normal.
Raises a whole different set of questions. Well,
now, it doesn't clear up, again, how it got there.
Right.
Or, you know, why.
But I mean, you can at least kind of see where, I mean, you know, if one is in search of new sensations, can we just speak here?
Or someone else was angry at him.
Well,
they just stuck it.
I mean,
there.
I'm tired of you doing acid for the last time. I told you last time I was going to put a mouse in your ass. Now it's time. Bend over.
I told— it's like washing your mouth out with soap, but not quite.
How else do you deal with an acid freak?
We speak honestly as men here. I mean, there's a reason why American Pie had the whole pie humping thing, because I'm sure that there's some female equivalent to this. I mean, that can't just be a thing that's confined to like the pages of Penthouse. But guys will put their schlong into any number of weird— I mean, like once a year, we get a story about some guy gets his putts caught in a vacuum cleaner or something, and he clears— I was cleaning the house nude, and then I just fell down the stairs, and it went into the, you know, whatever. And it's just because guys are always just jamming it. Or like, oh God, there was this story that came out when I lived in Spokane, and I think what's his name, Chuck Palahniuk, actually ended up putting it in one of his books.
Oh, but no.
The guy with the pool drain?
No, no.
Oh.
No.
You know what I'm talking about,
though. Yes, because I read that story. And
oh,
no.
You shouldn't read that story.
Oh, yeah.
Don't
yeah, I read the Chuck
head.
Palahniuk story. And
yeah,
like, ah.
Based on a guy in Washington. He's like, well, that's got to feel different. Hold on, let me lower my trunks. Oh! You know, and it felt different, as in he'd probably never experienced his intestines being removed.
Yeah.
before. So Pro-labs. You got to imagine that the same thing happens with the other side of the equation, so to speak.
No, I don't actually, you know, own a penis, obviously, but I would think that you
kind of visit one.
I would think that you fellas
you host
would
one from time to time, like an exchange student.
Yes,
his name is Hong. He's going to be staying with us for about an hour.
Where's my automobile?
I've shared quality time with the occasional penis.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that I would think
occasional
that
penis.
He just wrote a country song.
Yeah.
It just seems to me that you fellas would be a little bit more discriminating about what you put it in.
No, absolutely not.
Really, have you gone to like the triple nickel late on a Friday night? No.
No, it's seriously, it's like men analyze shapes differently. Like I look at, you see a circle, I see like, can I fit it in there?
Really?
No matter what it is, if it's like too far away or if it's not even to scale, I'm just like, I can probably
seriously.
Wow. A trip to Dunkin' Donuts must be like amazing for you.
No,
every time I see Lard Lad, I'm just thinking, I could rock that.
Here's Alice Cooper tells a story about achieving a male fulfillment with I swear to God a jelly donut. I swear to God, he's told that story before.
Well, what is it? Everything you were afraid to ask, everything you want to know about sex, but were afraid to ask. Where the mad scientist like, and in this cage, we are forcing a man to have sex with a rye bread. And there he is just going to town, this giant life-size rye bread. It doesn't matter if there's a hole in it or we will make a hole. There's just wonders about different textures.
Because I hate to be this guy. I hate to sound like some, you know, you women have it easy, because clearly, demonstrably, you do not. But I will say that as much as women, with some justification, talk about the double standard in society and how, you know, men can go out and hump everything, but women are disparaged and, you know, whatever, and there's a, you know, the way you're viewed, and that is all true. By the same token, you know, women, men really get the fuzzy end of the lollipop when it comes to like to sexual aids and sexual toys and sexual whatever. Because you go to like an adult store, well, you know, you've heard of fantasy. It's like aisle after aisle after aisle after aisle of stuff for women.
And then one small dark dank corner for
yeah,
for guys.
And then you know, and then guys get you know. Well, guys get nothing, basically. I mean, guys get like a lockable booth, I think.
Well, yeah, no, there's
the fleshlight. Guys get the fleshlight.
And let us not be disparaging at all of the technology that fleshlight is trying to bring to the forefront.
But the reason we all know the fleshlight is because that's all there is.
You also get 47 different kinds of blow-up dolls, which always fascinates me because I see the display at some place like Castle Superstore, and I stand there and I realize that means that there are people coming in and actually shopping, like them going, I don't want a blonde. I want I don't like the face on that one so much. Your lips aren't pursed quite enough.
We have some things that have come across our
you guys have an alien blow-up doll.
Yes.
I only know this.
Vaginal mouth and, yeah.
I know this because when Sarah and I were there, when Bo Breedlove did his in-store signing, we were there, and there's this great video footage somewhere, which I don't think ever aired. I think KUFO decided I don't think they got the clearance of some of the folks in the background. But it was Bo Breedlove and Sarah and myself wandering the aisles at Fantasy. And Bubba, they're going, you know, what's this? And just off the shelf. And like, it was like an alien gray that you could like F. It was so creepy.
It was Area $69 is what you refer to it as.
Yes, it's, yes.
They don't even, like, the names are so stereotypical. It's hilarious. They actually exploit that. We have a blow up doll that is, we have a little person blow up doll. We also have a big woman blow up doll, which is like massive.
Like a little person, big fun, kind of a.
Yeah, it's kind of like blowing up a waterbed. It's massive. It's just.
How big is the big one?
So you can have like your Lilliputian fantasies or something.
You can tie her down with tiny ropes.
How big is the big woman doll?
They show it blown up on the box. It's pretty big in a pool. Because on the back there's a picture of a very large naked woman in a pool. I don't know why the water feature was necessary, but we have one Felicia that like the face is hard plastic, and there's a lock on her nether regions.
She's like a chastity blow up doll.
Kinda, yeah. It comes with a tiny little luggage lock.
And weird. Is that so? Like when you visit the like some.
Well, so like
you go to the convention,
away,
the other guys can't.
Yeah, if you have roommates, you can lock her up, take the key.
Oh God! Oh God! I never even thought about that. Oh Christ! Why did you put that image in my head?
Because that's where I live.
Ted, have you been to my room? No. Maybe a little bit for 30 seconds. I gotta ask you this.
It's still warm.
Just before we.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Cheryl. Just if you're listening out there and if we're busy negotiating some sort of new client deal or something, and you say, no, would you like to listen to the show right now? It always happens.
I hope those Christmas tree people are listening today.
Well, that's the thing. It's like we can create new sponsors just by talking about something horrid. It's like I can just, you know. But I have to ask you this. How much does that Fleshlight go for?
We have a series. Depends on the different textures inside. So they range from about $60 to $80. The $80 one actually comes with vibrating bullets that are inserted so that it can it can vibrate with and batteries too, which is also cool.
Look, on the one hand, it's like apparently it's amazing technology because I guess it's like the stuff they make the real doll or whatever out of, or the cyber skin or something, which I have felt, by the way, which is weird feeling because they have those dolls where it's like the little – it's like the Teddy Ruxpin thing where you can reach in and press his button where it's like there's a hole in the front of the box where it's like feel – you know, here's what it feels like. And
hello, my name is Jesse Jane.
And it's just $60, man.
Wow.
I'm just saying that's how much guys want to put their business in a thing. $60 right there.
Yeah. And they sell. We have also what they're called slabs, which are like, you know, if you want a blow-up doll, but you don't want to deal with like the whole like, you know, upper torso, lower torso thing. It's just like a certain like upper thigh to like stomach area of a woman.
God.
And you can just – and they have varying degrees. I will spare you the details
of what some of the other ones do.
But those go for upwards of about $300.
See, that's the sort of thing where just I get a little glimmer through the female keyhole, so to speak. but that's just where you look at that and you know why women's studies classes exist.
You know
why Gloria Steinem is a best-selling author when you look at that. You go, oh, I see. We're pigs. Okay, it all makes sense. We're horrid.
This is the sort of conversation that, you know, one remembers when you hear a man go, you know, in today's society, I don't think men objectify women.
I would never say that. I just didn't. I didn't know it was always so creepy.
Sometimes it's creepy.
No, it's creepy.
Jesus. I thoroughly enjoy working where I work because it is a microcosm, and I get to see this every single day. There was a time where a body was found in one of the stores.
Really?
And we didn't close. People were still coming up to the counters.
Daddy got to get his porn.
Exactly. I'm double parked, dude.
I mean, I got no problem with as I always say. Like if your mom didn't objectify your dad, you wouldn't be here. So I got no issue with that. It's just like. But that thing just has like the hint of serial killer on it, where it's like, and it's called a slab. Yeah. I mean, that's just I don't want to. No, do not want ever. All right, I'm sorry. I just got to take a moment so I can have a little. Just get a clear head.
If I actually owned a penis, though, I might actually go for one of those Fleshlight things. Then.
There you go.
Oh, see, but that
sound,
see because that
sound kind of cool. It sounds pretty cool.
Isn't that less creepy? Because then it's like. Then it's not like you're some guy who's like, well, I like ladies if they don't talk and if they don't have a face.
Well, yeah, it's not like you're buying that the latex vagina.
Yeah.
That's all it is, is the vagina. And that, I'm sorry. And particularly the ones that it's like, and this is from a cast that was modeled on your favorite porn star.
Yes. Yeah.
So you're actually like having sex with a replica of her actual labia.
And they've gone to the point now where they have like actual porn star signature Fleshlights where it's replicated after their particular genitalia and then autographed on like the area.
Okay, we're just gonna take it.
Emotion.
All right, it's not washing away the ick. Hold on a second. Let me just. Okay.
There we are. Quiet. Yes. Now, as you were saying.
All right, and then find just a little.
Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll never, never walk alone. You will never walk.
All right.
Wow, okay. I didn't know you had that on retainer.
That's
like the A-bomb that when you cleanse the room.
That's like we used to have that thing of Connie Chung just going, thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We are now pleased to present the inaugural installment of something that we talked to Jim O'Leary about doing a couple weeks ago, and we're happy to unveil it for you here. This is Mr. Big Jim Willig and Humor Me, Comedy 101.
Well, laughter and comedy have always been the great equalizer because you can be any age, you can be any gender, any religion, and still be funny. And what's also incredible is the fact that laughter can cross all those barriers effortlessly, universally. Laughter is by nature infectious. Many comics reveal that stand-up comedy is more addictive than any drug, more intoxicating than any alcohol. And when performed properly, let's just say it'll give great sex a run for its money. With that said, I'd like to welcome you to Humor Me, Comedy 101. I am your host, Big Jim, one-time knife salesman and now stand-up comic. Each week we'll bring you a different comic or comedian, actor or actress of the comedic persuasion, and analyze not just their comedy and their career, but also their impact on the world around them. For the first week, I decided we were going to use the first comic that I ever heard, Bill Cosby. And Bill, to me, was always very impressive because of the fact that he can make his ordinary life seem so relatable on pretty much every level. Working in the fact that he was a black comic working in a widely white-owned medium, the fact that he can make his black life seem as relatable to a white person just makes that acceptance much more of an impact. I like Bill because my mom first bought a copy of Bill Cosby himself when I was a little kid, and we gathered around my sister's AV tape recorder and pretty much laughed like lunatics for the better part of 45 minutes. At that point, I realized what I wanted to do when I grew up was I wanted to be a comedian. My dad was already an actor, comedically classically trained, so I already had the showman bug in me. And at that point, I realized that, yes, comedy was the path I wanted to take. Later that year, my school announced that they were going to be hosting a talent show, which I signed up for instantly, didn't even think twice about it. And I signed up to do stand-up comedy. I remember with crystal clarity sitting in the auditorium around a bunch of other kids from all different grades, very nervously waiting for their turn to go up and audition. I remember the most beautiful girl in my class, a girl by the name of Dana Master Mateo. Can't forget a last name like that, Master Mateo. She looked at me and actually for the first time talked to me and said, "Aren't you nervous about auditioning?" And I'm like, "Nah, I'm cool. I'm straight. I'm tight like a bug bite, girl. I ain't got no worries at all." I mean, because I knew that it was so easy to do. I mean, Bill made it sound so effortlessly just to sort of talk. He wasn't like doing set up punchline. He was just being funny. So I just knew that based on that it was no problem at all. So she was going to be part of like this cheerleading group doing "Oh Ricky, You're So Fine," but the Eternal Tome, as penned by one, was it Ricky Basil?
Tony Basil.
Ah, I always get that wrong. So she was going to do that, and they had this whole like routine that they were going to sing along and dance to. And I remember sitting there watching, like, oh, that's not too bad. And finally my name gets called, and it's like a scene out of any sitcom or John Hughes movie when Miss Catterbone, can't forget a last name like Catterbone, she was the one that was in charge of putting together the talent show that year, announced that little Jimmy Willig from Mrs. Dalk's third grade class was going to be doing stand-up comedy. Instantly, the air goes out of the room, somebody grabs the needle off the record, and all heads swivel in my direction. Suddenly, I have the attention of the entire auditorium. Still completely unshaken, I knew this is it, this is perfect. Now I have an audience. So I stand there for a moment, adjust the microphone, take a beat for myself, and I begin to do my material, which was Bill Cosby's himself, side one, first joke. And I can see the looks on their faces of these students and adults looking at this third grade kid talking like a full grown adult. Not just that, but a black comedian. You know, I'm just like, "Dentists tell you not to pick your teeth with any sharp metal object. Then you sit in their chair. And the first thing they grab is an iron hook." And the people were just like, they don't know whether to laugh or to boo or to, you know, throw chairs. They're just awestruck. And instantly, I get cut off by Miss Catterbone by saying, "Jim, no, you're doing Bill Cosby." I'm like, "I know, and pretty well, I might add." She's like, "No, you can't do another comedian's material. You just that's stealing." I'm like, "Well, yeah, but Dana didn't write 'Oh, Ricky, You're So Fine,' but yeah, that's totally okay. But I can't do Bill Cosby's material." And she's like, "No." So I was instantly rousted and unable to perform unless I write my own material in third grade. Okay, great. What life lessons have I learned at that point? But what that moment taught me was I could relate to Bill in some way because that was the kind of life story that one can build. Like, Bill would write 45 minutes based on that story alone. And had Bill Cosby himself been there, Well, I'm sure he would have had something to say about it. With that, I will turn the table over to the two people sharing the room with me, Mr. Rick Emerson and Ms. Dawn Taylor, and ask them your thoughts on Bill Cosby.
So that was how old were you when you did that?
Like 6 or 7.
I mean, first of all, that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That you would, as a kid, have... You know, I admire anybody who gets up in front of a crowd and performs something.
Yeah.
You know, and you're 6 or 7 years of age, and I guess either you are just too young to realize, you know, how weird and strange and kind of scary it can be to walk onto a stage,
mm-hmm.
You know, or you just already had the spark of the something that age, probably a combination of the two. It's funny you mentioned this, actually, because the first time you came on this version of the show, we talked about the idea of there being comedy cover acts.
Yeah.
And going into a club and saying, like, tonight I'm going to be doing, George Carlin's class clown.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be doing Sam Kinison's Have You Seen Me Lately. And so the idea that you actually started by doing Bill Cosby himself, and that they viewed it as just a completely unacceptable thing, which doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm just surprised that a teacher... was able to have HBO. That's what I was amazed by, that she was able to pick up on that.
So they recognized it right off.
She did, yeah.
Did you say, like, tonight I will be doing a series of stylings from the repertoire of Bill Cosby? You just did it, and she went, Bill Cosby.
Jimmy Willig is going to do stand-up comedy, and that's all she knew.
I have to ask, did you practice it into a mirror?
I did. I just remember for countless hours sitting there and listening to his cadence and his timing and the way that he could just sit back and let a joke kind of slowly, I call it sizzle. You let it sizzle and then slowly build into a crescendo. And just it's the master at work, being able to take this room full of people and just have them eating out of the palm of your hand. You know, as soon as I saw him do that, I was like, or heard him do that, because... I didn't have HBO. I didn't have those. I didn't get to see a comic do comedy, like standing in front of a group of people. In my mind's eye, it was just so bizarre to hear one voice and thousands of people laughing at that. I had no idea where it was taking place or what town it was in. It just seemed like a totally different universe, and I instantly just fell in love.
What is it you think that, and everybody could, you know, sort of knows the Bill Cosby cadence, and he draws out certain syllables and has that kind of low scrape of a voice. What is it that you think makes his comedy distinct?
Well, definitely the fact that his life has, and then he takes, you listen to his early stuff on LP where he's talking about like Noah and his ark and how God comes to Noah and he's just like, I want you to build an ark. And it needs to be like these cubits by that cubits. And, you know, and
what's a cubit?
Yeah, what's a cubit? Really? Who is this really? So just the fact that he could step into, he'd tell you a story and then climb into that character like a suit and like change his voice and do something silly. And it was just incredible how he could be so relatable and clean. Like you're laughing and you realize that there's no F-bombs being dropped. If anything, there was a joke that he did on himself that I didn't understand until years later, where he was talking about how like your mom always tells you to wear clean underwear
right.
when you go out in case you get into an accident. You know, because first you say it, then you do it.
You're
you know?
Going to have soiled underwear.
Yeah, and I didn't understand what he was getting at. And so I'm like, oh, he's talking about the S word. Oh, okay. And then I laughed again, and it was like he had that ability. And then later on, he did Bill Cosby and the Junkyard Gang. You know, and every character in that had something different. Like Fat Albert was obviously fat. Russell was a little big man syndrome. Or what was Russell? Was Russell a guy or a girl? The short one with the hat. And there was always just, you remind me of class of, in the summertime. Was it a guy?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And Mushmouth had a speech impediment. But they all got along.
And Old Weird Harold.
Harold was just weird. Harold was just weird. I don't know what it is about. He's weird.
Here's the thing about Cosby that is, I could never do stand-up comedy, first of all, because you've tried. Did you say you tried stand-up comedy?
Yeah, I did stand-up comedy.
What was it like? What was your experience? Because you don't do it anymore, obviously.
Sister.
So,
my experience is that it is one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life.
What was so hard about it?
What's hard is you are completely alone.
Yes.
You are completely alone. You have never in your life felt as alone as when you get up on a stage in front of a room full of drunk people who are basically looking at you with the attitude of, I dare you to be funny.
I paid $5. Make me laugh.
Let's be fair. Not everyone is drunk. Some of them are just neglecting their family.
That's true. And the thing about it is, yeah, there is no high, and I think every comedian says this, there's no high in the world better than when you killed.
That's why a lot of comics like Richard Pryor and pretty much every major comedian that you see makes it at some point has a hardcore drug problem, because that rush that you get, you chase when you're not on stage. You want something synthetic that can give you that same feeling.
But on the other hand, though, it's like when you bomb.
Oh God!
It is physically painful. It is hard. You think you feel bad having like a bad show. It's like you have a bad show standing all by yourself in a spotlight.
With everyone staring at you.
Everyone's staring at you. And then you go home alone after that. And there is no worse feeling in the world.
I need the whiskey and the gun just to polish. But no, you're absolutely right. When you bomb, you feel – and it's not just painful to experience, but it's also painful to watch. I mean, you as the audience.
Oh, God.
Like, I feel the empathy in the room is so high. And you know they're feeling bad for you, which makes you feel worse.
Can I tell you that this is actually one of the reasons I don't watch a lot of stand-up comedy, especially like in person, because and there's some weird, I don't even know what channel is. There's some strange, like one of the strange cable channels that like seems to exist at some times, but then other times isn't there. It's like one of those channels where it's like they split time between two or three different stations. But every now and again, late at night, they will show live. I mean, I don't think it's being beamed live, but it's being performed live comedy at some off the strip club in L.A.
Yeah,
and it's just like up and coming comics in a you know. Not a tough crowd, but I mean, just guys off the street. And it's like, I'll watch it for about 30 seconds, and it's just it's nerve-wracking. I have to turn it off. But seeing live comedy is horribly painful for me in some ways, because I've done this, which is kind of in the same ballpark in some ways, that I can tell when it's going badly. And as soon as the guy loses the crowd, or he loses his own thread, or you see the look on his face, the recognition that, oh God, that didn't go very well, which means they're not going to get the two follow-ups that I'm going to do after this, which means they're not my kind of, oh Christ.
And it snowballs.
And that's all going on in his head while his mouth has to keep talking and going, no, but seriously, airline food.
And the fight or flight mechanism kicks in, and you get that gut-wrenching thing of anxiety, but you can't run away.
Right.
Because you're stuck for another 3.5 minutes.
Ugh.
And so it's like you're just waiting for that light to start flashing at the back of the room so you can just freaking leave.
I hate to ask awkward or trauma revisiting questions, but have you ever gotten booed or booed off?
I've never gotten booed off. I mostly the worst I ever got was just sort of the non-laughter, the sort of
the crickets,
sort of the hostile, like, okay, you're just not working for us, please go away now, kind of a feeling.
At least booing is a reaction. I think the worst is like no, like apathy, like there's nothing there for you. They're just I don't feel,
just goes into a void.
My worst booing happened, actually. I was booed off stage the second time I tried stand-up comedy. The first time was for another talent show, but it was hosted by an opera house in downtown Lancaster, PA. So I had I'd done it then. It was I lost, unfortunately, to two guys reciting Monty Python from scripts.
Oh, dear.
And they were doing it like speech and debate style. So like, they're standing next to each other and they're looking off in different directions.
It could be carried by an African swallow.
It was pretty much that. I'm like, how am I in high school, like sophomore year, going to compete with Monty Python?
Right.
But from that, I got contacted by the local public school that said that they were hosting a end-of-the-year blowout dance, and they were trying to get different acts, and that she had heard that I did stand-up comedy, and she wanted me to perform it at this like blowout thing. So I'm like, absolutely. And she's like, I'll pay you $30 to do 15 minutes. I'm like, wow, I forgot you can get paid for this, too. So I'm like, absolutely. And I showed up, and there was like a bunch of and it was the public school, so it was like predominantly black. And I'm like, I walk in there, and it's like a scene out of Stand By Me or Lean On Me. You know, there's just like kids running like all over the place, running crazy. And there's like a heavy metal band on stage, and the only people actually paying attention are like the four friends standing in front. And it was the same thing that happened the first time I did Bill Cosby material, where when they announced that, okay, now we got a stand-up comic, and let's do some laughs for you. Here's Big Jim Willig. Instantly, like, the floodgates opened and the place filled up, but there was no stage. I was standing at one end of a basketball court.
Ugh.
And I'm surrounded on all sides by people just sort of standing 5 feet away, judging, just looking at me, just like, it was like 8 Mile.
Well, and with certain crowds, too, I mean, it's just no matter where you go, there's people who go there and they are just, they're waiting for you to suck.
Yes.
They're waiting for you to be bad. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, you don't have to be on stage at the Apollo for that to happen. That can happen anywhere. You just stand there and it's like people are going like, and they have a hair trigger for when they want to hustle you off the stage. The reason that I ask all that is because you listen to Bill Cosby and he does, now admittedly, when he does Bill Cosby himself, he's already, you know, his career has already taken off and he's already done lots of successful comedy. comedy, and I think, you know, he'd done the Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids and, you know, an I Spy and all that stuff. But he does – he has that jazzy kind of comedy where he throws the word out and he goes, you know, dentists, and he has the long pause. And most comics don't have the confidence to do that because they don't want to give the audience a chance to shout, to speak, to yell something back. It really is like master. I mean, it's like balls aplenty to have that laid-back, laconic delivery of his. Most guys don't – even now, most comics wouldn't – they don't dare speak that slowly and with those big pauses.
Yeah, my father, when I studied speech and debate, he taught me – he would give a sign while I would be performing, and it would basically be a showing of slow down. You know, you're running through this. You need to let it develop. When you publicly speak, you're painting a picture in the other person's head. Your imagination creates this, and you're putting it into somebody else's mind. So you need to give them time to kind of process it, because not everyone can process that as quickly.
Let me ask you this. So he's gone. Bill Cosby's obviously gone through a lot of different stages where he was, a really groundbreaking comic, then a TV star. Then he became everybody's favorite dad. He did The Cosby Show. We talked, I think, briefly last week about Leonard Part 6 in the Kitchen, which is a movie so bad that he actually went on television opening weekend, on the opening Friday, and told people not to go see it. He went on Good Morning America very famously and said, it's a terrible film, and I would like for you to stay home and not, you know, and he was, which is, I'd never see, and I don't think I've ever seen it since then, where a guy, especially a guy who was a huge star that went on television, he was like, don't see it. It's bad. Stay home. Please, please, please don't watch it. And he became a pitch man and whatever. And you hear every comic talk about, it's like with Charles Schulz, we're talking to Mike Russell about this yesterday, who interviewed Berkeley Breathed from Bloom County. And they were talking about Charles Schulz and Peanuts and what a huge towering legacy he is. And Bill Cosby is sort of the same way. Everybody name checks Bill Cosby, talks about what a huge influence he is. But is there anybody that really sounds like him? I don't hear a lot of comics and I go, oh, there's a little Bill Cosby going on there. Maybe I'm just not listening in the right places.
Well, it's with Bill, it's he's often imitated with like the cadence and the voice and everything else. But the way he does it, it's the fundamentals. You know, he doesn't have to, you know, create what-if scenarios. He can take any simple interaction with another human being and just repeat it in such a way that, you know, you just fall over laughing. And there's no way you can really kind of quantify. That's why it's elusive. And a lot of comics, like I think it's Jay Leno, is terrified that tomorrow he's going to wake up and not be funny. Because there's just the way your brain kind of – it's the cylinder that fires that you have. And for some reason, you can't explain it. But it's the way your brain interprets certain things. So with Bill, it's always been the fundamentals. You know, talk about life. Talk about, you know, what's around you. And
he also does really long, winding stories, too, as opposed to, as you said, the setup punchline, which makes it, I think, difficult to imitate him because there aren't jokes as such.
Yeah, he's,
I mean,
just funny.
They're kind of stories as opposed to, you know, like two guys go into a bar, you know, take my wife, please, or whatever. He does use the long sort of the long, winding anecdote that is funny in total, as opposed to, you know, as opposed to just being studded with a bunch of laugh lines.
Yeah, there's an incredible film called Funny Bones that stars Oliver Platt and Jerry Lewis, strangely enough, that Jerry Lewis has one of the most prolific statements I've ever heard. And to me, it just kind of really pulled a lot of things together. He's like, there are some people that are funny and there are some people that have funny bones. It's in their body.
Right.
You know, you can sit down and you can build a joke that is misdirection. You know, that's basically all joke is. Start at A, you're going to end at C, but how you get there is the inner workings of the whole thing. And there are some people that just everything they do, they leak comedy. Is what it is. And get a bucket. It's there. It's just falling out of them. You can't quantify it. You can't write it down. I have a friend, Don Frost, that is an incredible comedian. I saw him get an applause break by spilling beer. Like, he's going off on this tangent. He's shaking his beer, and this tidal wave of beer comes up over the top of the glass and crashes on the floor, and he just watches it drop. And just the place fell apart just because of the way he was building the joke. And also very much like Bill Cosby, no real linear line, just like kind of all over the map. And, you know, you can't sit and write that like, okay, and then I will spill beer and then hold for applause and then go on to the next thing.
Well, if you did, it wouldn't necessarily be funny. There's just a certain intangible quality to people like that.
And that's what makes you a legend, is the fact that the way you do what you do makes it unique, and that can't be stolen. You can take the joke and rewrite it and try and put it out your way. But ideally, you're taking away like the surface. The core is what Bill is at his nature, and that is a very, very funny person.
Before we wrap this segment up, if somebody wants to start, I mean, it's inconceivable that somebody would not be familiar with Bill Cosby. But maybe if somebody has met, they haven't heard his stand-up for a long time, or they just know him from TV or from movies or from whatever. If somebody's going to start with Bill Cosby as a comedian, do they start with Bill Cosby himself, or what do they start with?
Well, he's I was like the was it 50 Miles an Hour? One where he basically it's I've only ever seen it mostly on LP, but that one is one of his early works, and it's taped in a club, and it's just Bill at his finest, you know, just like you said, very jazzy, very easygoing, and he just discusses, you know, the things that occur every day. So yeah, I would suggest 50 Miles an Hour by Bill Cosby for a good introduction to Bill.
Excellent. There you go. Humor Meet Comedy 101, Mr. Big Jim Willig. By the way, you can find out more about Jim's comedy at facebook.com/Jim Willig, like willing with no N.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Okay. facebook.com/Jim Willig. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program now, ladies and gentlefolk. Will you please give your attention to Don Taylor at the news desk?
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, it seems like a good time for our stupid criminal of the week.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. It's especially good because just seconds ago, moments ago, I removed the bed for that to replace it with Miles Davis. I see now the error of my ways. Oh, the things I'd do differently. All right. And there we go. All right. Here is your stupid criminal of the week. This is brought to you by mugshotlist.com, founded and run by our listener, Andy.
Andy!
You can find out more about all of that by going to mugshotlist.com. You can see mugshots from across the fruited plain, from sea to shining sea. Always adding new counties, always adding new states, updated around the clock by an army of robots. Full membership gets you all kinds of functions, like able to search by county, you're able to search by gender, you're able to browse all the mugshot lists and all the mugshots themselves in any way that you like. Mugshotlist.com. They're bringing you this, the stupid criminal of the week.
A man who tried to avoid arrest by vacating the driver's seat while his car was still moving was arrested for driving without a valid license. The incident began around 3:40 p.m. when a deputy in Okaloosa County, Florida, initiated a traffic stop in the 1990 Cadillac sedan near the Coast Guard station on U.S. Highway 98. Before the vehicle pulled over, the deputy observed the driver jump over the back of the driver's seat into the rear seat area as the car was still moving.
Awesome.
The front seat passenger slid over to the driver's seat and stopped the car. A search of the original driver's license revealed the 33-year-old's license had been suspended after he didn't pay traffic fines.
What was the next step of the plan? What was in the back seat? Was there a portal to another dimension that was lurking underneath the Afghan that he was... No, hold on. I left my hole of escaping here.
My TARDIS is in the trunk.
Where was he going? What next, do you suppose?
I think the plan was for them to say to the police officers...
Ted?
I wasn't driving. I've been sitting in the back seat all along.
Because that's where you sit.
Yeah. I am new to country. I know your combustion. I spent many chicken to get here.
Well, during the course of the stop, the deputy also found 4 grams of marijuana inside a package of cigarettes.
Stunned.
When questioned, the driver said he had left the driver's seat to avoid arrest, but said the marijuana was his and the passenger was unaware of its presence. The man was charged with driving with his license suspended and possession of less than 20 grams of marijuana,
making him
our stupid criminal of the week.
There you go. There's your stupid criminal of the week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Mugshotlist.com, run and operated by our listener Andy. Again, full membership lets you search mugshots by county, by state, by gender, by any number of criteria. So find out more by going to mugshotlist.com or Mugs Hot List if you are Bruce Agler. Mugshotlist.com. They are the proud sponsor of this, your stupid criminal of the week. And just as because I said I would do this and I asked you to hold off on the story just so I could read it, I feel like it's been so unbelievably oversold at this point. It's been built up into a thing that I can't possibly match in terms of anticipation, but, you know, I'll read it just the same. I was going to put the woman's mugshot up, and then I just decided that after the mugshot that we unveiled on Legion of News, which we should revisit maybe briefly if we have a chance before we wrap things up today, the one-man crime wave... that we discussed in Legion of News. You can see that mugshot at rickemerson.com/pictures. rickemerson.com/pictures. I didn't think any other police arrest photo would really work. They would all be overshadowed by that guy. So you'll just have to imagine what this woman looks like. She's sort of just a sack of flour with eyes.
Oh, God.
Kind of like you were to take a sack of flour and just shove some black marbles into the front of it, like little piggy inset Augustus
raisins.
Gloop eyes. Yes,
couple of
exactly.
Raisins.
Yes.
A sack of flour.
Like a snowman of shame.
Woman threatens men with knife and demands oral sex.
Ah, I heard the story.
Yes. Melissa Lee Williams, 41, of West Virginia, is facing assault and weapons charges after allegedly waving a knife at two men who declined her demands to engage in sexual conduct at a motor inn. A motor inn, now is a motor inn like a trailer park, or is a motor inn like a Holiday Inn, like a hotel, but like if you're in a vehicle?
It's like an especially crappy motel.
It's more romantic.
Is it like that place that's on like 6th and Dunaway or whatever, like if you're getting onto the 405?
It's usually between the airport and a strip club.
And it says color TV.
Yes, yeah. And free HBO.
Awesome. The October 22nd incident is detailed in a Jackson County Sheriff's Department report. According to investigators, Williams, who lives four doors down from her estranged husband at the 77 Motor Inn, showed up at his door and asked Danny Williams and another man to perform oral sex on her. At this point, Williams, this is the other man, not her ex, who presumably knew better. At this point, William, quote, commenced to undress himself. Williams, the woman, commenced to undress herself, reported Deputy Ross Mellinger. While Danny Williams declined said invitation, the other man, Adam Watson, after witnessing the undressing, told cops that he agreed to perform at her request. However, as Watson approached Williams, quote, he became overwhelmed and sickened by what he described as an unbelievable, horrible odor emitting from what they charitably refer to as Ms. Williams' private area.
Swimsuit area.
God.
Watson, understandably, quote, declined to proceed further, end quote. This is when Melissa Williams allegedly produced a lockback folding knife, opened it.
Where was she carrying that?
Oh, I think we know.
If she, you know, undressed, never mind.
Opened the knife, pointed the weapon at her estranged husband. She then reportedly said, quote, I have cleaned this up for the airwaves because no one needs to have her actual lingo sort of in your head. She said, quote, somebody is going to perform oral sex on me or I'm going to cut your effing throat, end quote. When Deputy Mellinger arrived on the scene, he observed Williams, who, like the two men, appeared to be intoxicated, nude from the waist down. After pocketing a knife that was on the coffee table in front of Williams, Mellinger arrested her for domestic assault and brandishing a deadly weapon. Williams, who was released from jail after posting a $3,000 bond, is next due in Jackson County Magistrate Court on February 16th. So just to revisit just the core, the center, the real nucleus of the story. While Danny Williams declined the invitation to perform oral sex, the other man, Watson, told cops he agreed to perform at her request. However, as he approached Williams, he became overwhelmed by a unbelievably horrible odor emitting from Ms. Williams' private area. He declined to proceed any further.
Well, I can tell you from experience that the whole, hey, somebody's going downtown or I'll cut your throat thing rarely comes off as romantic as you think.
But when it does work, it's magical.
You know, here's the thing about it is that we were just talking, you know, like 10 minutes about like guys humping garden hoses and like, you know, like pool spouts or something. Imagine how off-putting the woman must have to be if she's got a knife. I mean, guys will actually go out of their way to find places and offer money. Like we're talking about the fleshlight.
Yeah.
A guy will pay $80 for an inanimate object to put his wang in. She's got a knife and she's like, it's right here, baby. And he's like, no, I just can't.
To be fair, though, she was asking him to perform oral sex on her.
Yeah.
She was not asking for a humping. He might have done that.
I can't even.
I just love the fact that, you know, the ex-husband's like, no, I'm not going to do that. That'd be weird. But his buddy's like, all right, bro.
Dude.
All right, I'm going to step up. Bros being bros.
Seriously.
Sure, why not?
Dibs.
She's right here.
Shotgun.
Ugh. All right. It's funny how that little hook always comes in right when you need it. Was this going to be your penis watch?
No.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense, but all right.
No, I have a complete. I had a completely different penis watch story.
Let's maybe delay that until Monday.
And a corpse watch.
Oh, God.
That involved dogs eating somebody.
Oh.
I had lots of things for today, and it's just all gone
Don't
haywire.
You think for the benefit of all of humanity, we should just push a couple of those things until Monday?
Yeah, pretty much everything was distasteful, but awesome.
Yes.
Today.
Ah, Jesus. All right, there you go. There's your story, as promised. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. All right. Before we do anything else, so Don, you're sort of the keeper of the schedule. What ought we do at this point? Because we want to get out of here in time for Greg and Sarah.
We still have not gotten to two our sponsors. Two.
I'm almost certain that's not true.
Did you do CJ's?
We've talked about the Castalia language.
Oh, did we? Okay, then we have choirs. Then we do need to do.
I will mention CJ's High Climbing here just a bit.
We did do Squires. I just didn't write it down.
So we've got that, and then we've got because we had the we have the watch ready. We have the we have a top five. We have a thing.
There's so many things.
So you tell me, sister. We got additional news to get to as well.
Here's the thing.
Make the call.
We should revisit the guy on the crime spree because we've got the awesome mugshot of him.
Yes.
We should do. We got the clergy watch, and we also have the top five, which has been sitting around for 2 days. We could do the top five.
Let's do the one man crime wave, then we'll do the top five.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here is Don Taylor.
A Southeast Portland man is facing several criminal charges stemming from what police are calling a one-person crime spree last month in Milwaukee. Mark David Siebenmorgan, 46, is being held in Clackamas County Jail with bail set at $75,000. He was arraigned on Wednesday. According to the Milwaukee Police spokeswoman, ostensibly Siebenmorgan, shoved another man to the ground without warning at the downtown Milwaukee bus mall around 9:35 p.m. on October 21st. 20 minutes later, a man was reported flailing his arms and flexing his muscles as he jumped up and down on the hood of a car parked near a Catholic church while the driver was still behind the wheel. The man kicked and shattered the windshield before he ran away. At 10:26 p.m., a man burst from the bushes and confronted a woman behind Milwaukee Marketplace. As she walked away, he threw rocks at her, striking her in the neck. Police used a tracking dog but were unable to find the suspect. However, the following day...
Because he's so hard to spot in the crowd. By the way, you can see this guy's photograph. Jim, have you seen the...
I just did.
Go to rickemerson.com/pictures and you go to your visual aids for November 12th. rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for November 12th. You'll know it when you see it.
He's a poorly carved jack-o'-lantern.
He really is.
The following day, employees of the Safeway store on King Road called police to report unsettling comments made by a customer.
That's hard to believe.
And police then apparently just
they
went.
They just sounded like.
And police apparently said, "Oh, that's that Siebenmorgan guy," went to his apartment and arrested him.
God. These eggs are hard to digest.
God damn! I mean, it's just is there something wrong with my upper plate?
No,
and it's the best mugshot.
Do
ever.
I have something in my teeth? It's unbelievable the number of ways in which he looks bizarre, and yet in which he looks completely awesome.
Yeah.
As I said, I think at Legion of News, it's sort of like if Randy Quaid as Cousin Eddie was like a sort of low rent master criminal. If you were just
choppers.
I don't care who else is in the lineup. If you're looking for the guy who's done the one man crime wave. He could be flanked by Stalin
I'm sure
and Hitler.
It's him.
Yeah, and you go like, it's that right guy right there. Like, I don't even need to.
It's got
to
be him.
Just by sense of feel, you could probably pick him out of a lineup.
The face screams awesome singing voice, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't he also look like he's embracing his own nature?
Absolutely.
Like
he's living life.
He has no illusions about what he is and what his purpose on planet Earth might be.
I'm not going back to law school. Never.
I mean, look at the tensed up sinews in that neck, too, because he's working really hard to make that face.
He's selling it. I mean.
He is selling that.
Oh, man.
He's the guy in jail that you don't want to get, sellied up with.
No.
You see him getting put in your cell? Oh, it's a bad day.
I mean, and it's like I get closer and closer to this photograph. And again, you can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual age, November 12th. There's so many things. A, the teeth. B,
the crazy mismatched eyes.
The one squinty eye and the one big eye, like Popeye, sort of. And then he's got, neck tattoos, I think. I hope those aren't veins.
I think those are the veins popping out in his neck. I swear to God it is.
And then he's got this sort of great, kind of quasi, like pompadour kind of a.
He
know,
has
like,
great hair. Let
he
us
does
not
have great
that.
Hair. I mean,
he has the best kind of crazy guy hair.
I mean, his hair is sort of kempt in a sort of criminal kind of way.
And then this like total like Wolverine beard thing he's got going on.
He really is. I hadn't really even got the Wolverine thing, but you're totally right about that.
He could be a Paul Mitchell model.
It's just.
What kind of product do you use?
Volumizer!
I shouldn't have even laughed at that. Oh, God, that's funny. This photo makes everything funny. There's nothing you can say about it. There's no caption. I think we have to do, like, some Photoshop contest or something. Not even a captioning contest, but just like a...
Yeah, we're talking about using this for, like, everything. Every time we have a story, we go, we have a mugshot. Except, like, we put a monocle on him in one picture. Put a mustache on him and a big handlebar mustache.
So it's like...
A little top hat.
Any story, you know, like Boutros Ghali was arrested for jaywalking, and then you just cut to this guy. So this might be our stand-in
in a
mugshot.
Jacket.
He's like a two-dimensional Rick Roll.
Oh, God. If you're lacking grist for your Photoshopping mill, lack no longer.
Yes, please, anyone who's listening, please send us any Photoshop. Photos of this guy that you want to work up because anything you do with this will be funny. Make him a little lolcat thing. You know, whatever.
Hang in there, kitty. The weekend's coming.
I can't has meth.
It's just so fantastic.
I'm not one for profiling, but, you know, whenever you see a guy, you hear the story, like he's throwing rocks at a woman in a Safeway. Like, whenever you see the picture of the guy, it's always like, of course he's the one throwing the rocks.
Yeah,
look at him. Yeah. So we should have a bus that just drives around and picks up people that are just like, okay, you're obviously going to be a future Amber Alert.
Yeah, they're...
I'm doing this to society a favor.
That really is a thing where you can make a little preemptive strike. You know, just a little surgical strike on the community to make sure that things don't go poorly in the future. Oh, God damn. All right. Well, that mugshot, which is awesome. Epic. By the way, I mean, really, like, so great that we almost, I feel like we should just retire mugshots, like, as a society. like many things on the program brought to you by our fine business partners, including CJ's High Climbing. And I mentioned this during Legion of News today, which you can hear at legionofnews.com or via iTunes. That's a show that airs from noon to one every day here at rickemerson.com and also at cascadia.fm. We mentioned that we got this email yesterday. Listener Tony says, Rick, dude, wanted to let you know that I booked an estimate with CJ's High Climbing just now. I spoke to Katie, who was just as nice as can be, as nice as pie. I was sure to let her know the reason I called them was because they were advertising your show. Katie said that they were glad to get the feedback. So, again, if you contact CJ's or any of our fine sponsors, please do tell me you heard about it here. He says, I look forward to living the rest of my life with the full use of my arms and legs due to the fact that CJ's will be doing the high climbing ladder work at my home. Best show ever. Tony, P.S., don't be a dick about the McRib thing. So there you go. Which, by the way, I could have just edited that out on the fly. I could have given you a truncated, expurgated version of this. But no, Rick Emerson is not that man.
Thank you, Tony, by the way. Thank you for getting my back on that.
I'm just saying, Rick Emerson relays the comments honestly and completely as they come in. I don't pick and choose. I don't cherry pick to make myself look good. This is not that show. You can find out more about CJ's High Climbing at 503-228-9278, 503-228-9278, or you can go to cjshighclimbing.com, whether it is Sean, Bo, Lauren, whether it's Gary, whether it's Katie, apparently nice as pie, who will deal with your call. Please tell me you heard it here, and you can get yourself a free estimate in many cases. Not all cases, but quite a lot of them. If you're getting your gutters cleaned, or if you're getting your roof taken care of because it's got the mold overgrowth that'll actually pry the shingles apart over the course of the summer and the winter, it means you can get leaks in the roof. They can take care of that, and they can give you an estimate using Google Earth many times. It means they can just give you an estimate right there on the phone, and they can invoice you later, so you don't have to take time off to actually be there when they're doing the work. They'll come, they'll do it, you come home, the house is going to be fine. Find out more about it at cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness.
Is it ecstasy? No, it's a... That's my fault there. My fault, I was loading a thing while the other thing was happening. This is your top five for Friday, November 12th, 2010. Dawn Taylor, what is today's top five?
Well, inspired by the phenomenal success of that Taylor Swift and her little
record. Her joint.
Her little record that she's got out. Many of these songs, apparently, which are about real-life romantic relationships.
They all appear, by the way, because I have spent a disproportionate amount of time listening to that record and analyzing it, when I'm not putting up Tiger Beat posters on the walls of my bedroom. They all appear to be
with
about...
a date with Hulka.
JoJo describes her best date ever. They all appear to be about either John Mayer or Joe Jonas. So, okay. There you go. Like, in case you're playing the Taylor Swift home game, I played it for you. I've already figured it
None
out.
None about Shirtless Werewolf Boy?
Taylor Lautner?
Yeah.
No, I'm guessing they had a good breakup, you know?
Okay.
She probably, I would imagine at this point, Taylor Swift probably does that F. Scott Fitzgerald thing. You know, it's like, Zelda, you should get drunk and go F that guy across the street so I have something to write about for my next book. All right, great. Awesome. Let me know how it goes. So she's probably disappointed whenever a guy doesn't just dump her horribly over the phone for, like, another girl or something. Because she's like, damn, no song to be had here. It's called Amicable Parting. That doesn't rhyme with anything. Here's Dawn Taylor, the top five rock or pop songs written about a real person.
Yes, about real-life romantic relationships.
Real relationships. Excellent.
Our honorable mention goes, because it's got to be on the list, to Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know.
I'm not uhing at this song, by the way.
It's got to be on the list.
No.
People would complain.
Uhing at Canada.
I'm not uhing. Yes, it's not even the song, it's the whatever. We did a top five, I think, one time, a long time ago, about top five observations that radio DJs are, like, legally required to make whenever they play a song.
Nah.
And this was one of them, where you got to go, you know, it's about that guy from that show that's, what's his name, Dave Coulier or whatever.
Yeah. Cut it out.
Yeah. So, and then somebody goes, yeah, get out of here. She's crazy. You go, yeah, a woman scorned and all that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. A teenager scorned.
Great song, though.
It is a great song. It's a great album. It's still a great album.
I saw her in concert a couple years ago, actually, and she was quite good, not bad at all. I didn't know what to expect. She was her and the Bare Naked Ladies, which is kind of the reason we went. But she was actually really, really good. She put on a great show.
I'm very open about my my love of Alanis. I have the cassette tape, Jagged Little Pill, fantastic album.
Sarah Dillon sat on. This is so weird. I don't even know why I'm saying this. Our meeting starts in bathrooms. I don't know what that's about. Like, I got the thing of stalking Taylor Swift in the John, and then Sarah used the sit down toilet at Intercom immediately after Alanis Morissette. It's just like, I just sat on a seat that was warmed by the ass of Alanis Morissette. It's my best day ever.
Isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
This is, and, you know, I don't have a lot of those sort of as a woman experiences, really, because generally, thinking of myself as a woman is sort of like, you know, tertiary at best to the way I deal with the world at large.
I just think of you as Candace Gingrich.
Yeah, I am a guy with boobs most of the time. But this album, this was one of those things where when this came out, you really didn't hear music this angry and this raw about a woman's experience, particularly, like, on the radio.
Well, and we always heard, when this record first came out, it was, you know, the internet didn't have a lot of penetration at that point, so you would just get rumor and half-truths. I remember hearing this at the gym with my friend, I don't remember his name now, but I was years and years ago, back when I cared about my health, and I was at a gym or whatever, the song came on, and I'm like, well, this is a weird-sounding song, and he's like, dude, he's like, the chick's 13. And it was like, and she was really young. I don't know if she was actually
still
15. A teenager. No, she wasn't that young.
No, she was.
No, she was past 15.
You sure?
Because, she'd already put out like 3 records in Canada.
Okay.
I mean, I'll double check it right now. I would be astounded. Only because I think this was like her fourth album, and I just can't even imagine that she was that young. She might have been that young when she wrote it. Who knows?
I think she was that young when it happened.
But we just heard, like, all the time. It was like, yeah, she's like 13, and Flea plays on the record, which did turn out to be true. By the way,
she was like 20 something when this album came out.
Yeah,
no, she was.
Oh yeah, she
about,
dated the guy when she was really young,
because
he's Canadian too, right? And they all stick together, sons of bitches.
But how old is Uncle Joey?
Well, he was, I think, in his late 20s, early 30s when he managed her, and she was like 15.
Wow.
When they had a relationship. And that's what the whole song is about, you know, him telling her to keep it on the QT because, you know, they have something special and no one else would really understand.
Oh, really? Is that true? I didn't know that. Wow. I had no idea. So, yeah, so I don't know when she dated him. Yeah, she was 21 when this came out, and I guess she must have then dated him, I don't know, so it would have been like 6 or 7 years before that at least. Jesus, she's won 16 Grammy Awards and Juno Awards. All right. So there you go. That's your honorable mention. Top five songs about real relationships.
Number five, Brilliant Disguise, Bruce Springsteen. This is about his first wife, Julian Phillips. Who's from Lake Oswego.
I was going to say they got married in Lake Oswego. I hold you in my Which I didn't know until I was reading this book called Glory Days by Dave Marsh, which is all about the post Born in the USA period for Springsteen and how his world changed and how his music changed after that. And at one point he's like, and then they stopped over to a little burg called Lake Oswego to get married. I had no idea. And I guess it was a thing where, like, you know, the press was all over him to figure out where the wedding was going to take place, and then, you know, it would happen here, and they managed to keep it really quiet. Here's the thing about this song is it's not bad either, and songs about relationships have a disproportionately greater chance of being bad, because if it's a song about someone you really love or a dead relative of some kind, those songs have an annoying tendency to bypass your internal "this sucks" filter, because it's like you're blinded by love and you can't go, "Oh my God, wonderful tonight's a terrible song," you know. And
yeah,
so,
but this is one of those great songs that somebody writes when everything's starting to go to pieces.
Right.
When you say, you know, "Can you tell me what I see when I look in your eyes? Is it just you or a brilliant disguise?" That's what you get for marrying a model. I got nothing else to say about this. As we talk.
See, Springsteen for me has always been kind of hit or miss. You know, he's got that, like, overwhelming, like, all-American boy appeal. And you're right, there's the cornball element that kind of gets ramped up whenever the relationship basis for a song comes about. So, I mean, you really have to... If it's being faked, it's very easy to detect, like a cheap
perfume. And I tell you, though, you know, if she thought that being married to him was going to be, like, good for her career, divorcing him certainly did her no favors.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
She just dropped off the face of the earth.
I'm sorry, and I just had to duck out there for a second. I wanted to make sure that Greg and Sarah were not cooling their heels in the green room here. So, these are the top five songs based on a real romantic relationship. Don Taylor, number four.
Number four is the Rolling Stones' Angie.
Now, is this about Anita Pallenberg?
No, this is about Angela Bowie.
Is that true? Okay, see,
yeah.
That's interesting then, because I always heard that it was them, that it was somebody, or I guess Keith, hiding Anita in Angie or whatever, but I guess it makes more sense that it's about Angela Bowie.
Angel.
God, what a great song.
Angel. When will those clouds all disappear? Angel.
You know, we say this every time a Stones song comes up, but one of the great things about this era of the Rolling Stones, like a lot of, I don't know, so-called classic rock, is that they didn't feel the need to have it be a constant wall of amplified and electric sound. That there's spaces in the song, in the production, that there's the, you know, the acoustic guitar and then there's piano, but there's like all of this room between the different elements where the song can breathe. You know, and like in the 80s, like with the power ballad, it just became where it was like, you know, the quiet opening and then just the big slabs of like these rhinestone chord changes that would happen for the next 3 minutes. And there was no dynamic to the song. It didn't have any lightness to it, which the French does.
This is just one of those great mournful being in love with somebody that you can't really have kind of songs. So.
And every guy that dated an Angie and had them broke her. Oh, yeah, that this was like their anthem.
And that line about they all went up in smoke. There is nothing sadder than the well-executed song about someone that you still love and wanted to work with, and it's just not, and it's like the Nobody's Fault song.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a million songs about, like, F you and, you know, whatever, and we're done, and you broke my heart. But it, and, you know, those are great, and they serve their purpose artistically and whatever. But the song about, like, the where you're trying to make it work, and it's like it just doesn't for reasons that no one can really quantify, those are the ones that just kill you. Mm. All right, these are the top five songs about a real romantic relationship. Don Taylor.
Number three is Elvis Costello, Baby Plays Around.
I don't think I know this song.
It's not open to discussion anymore. She's out again tonight.
Who is this about?
Well, that's the interesting thing about this song. This is off his album Spike. And I read an interview with him at some point after this came out. The song was written by his then-wife, Kate O'Riordan, who was a bass player for the Pogues. He was out. He had been out. God only knows where. And he came home, and she had written this song and left it on the kitchen table.
Wow.
And he read it and said, oh, my God, this is a beautiful song. And he tinkered with it a little bit, and he put it on his next album. And the thing about this song is, by implication, this song's about him.
Right. Yes, I immediately went to that conclusion.
Yeah, this is a song about him being a womanizer from the point of view of his wife, and he changed the gender and recorded it, which is just so kind of twisted.
Well, it's a very Elvis Costello thing to do.
A beautiful song.
She doesn't even know it's wrong, how much I hurt inside. And heaven knows I've tried, but baby plays around.
Wow.
Just a plaything. It's hard to reconcile.
And was she a songwriter? I mean, other than this?
Yeah, she wrote some stuff. She wrote a couple of songs with him. She wrote some of the Pogue stuff, I think.
Because that's one of those. That's one of the fundamental rules. Look, as any ex of Andy Partridge will tell you, you just don't. You know, if you date a songwriter, have a good breakup. Because otherwise, you're going to find yourself made into like a three-part concept album. These are the top five songs about a real relationship. Don Taylor?
Number two is Leonard Cohen, Chelsea Hotel number two.
I remember.
And this is about his relationship with Janis Joplin.
In the Chelsea Hotel. You were talking so brave and so sweet. Giving me head on the unmade bed. While the limousines wait in the street. Those were the reasons, and that was New York. We were running for the money and the flame.
I'm so depressed.
Really?
It's like five in a row. I just want to kill myself.
For the workers.
Why do we always do this on a Friday?
Probably still is. For those
play Catch in the Cradle next.
Yeah, but you got away.
You know, he's on tour, right? He's coming to Portland.
He's pretty amazing.
I've never seen him.
Just in time for winter. The law of the dark. Unfeeling winter.
And I just saw Leonard Cohen. I'm going to go home to my cold, dark apartment now.
Top five songs to cut yourself to, everybody.
I need you. I don't need you. And all of them. Jiving around.
But Leonard Cohen's got that voice. Like, you know, what's a good day for Leonard sound like? You know, what's excited Leonard? You know,
yeah, even Tom Waits does some jaunty numbers. Yeah.
You were famous, your heart.
That's like a glum off.
Punching my soul in the nuts.
Told me again, you
it's awesome. Ah, levity. It's good to laugh. I love Leonard Cohen. I really do. He's one of those guys you got to be in the right mood for. But if you are in that mood, there is
depression.
Yeah, there's. But you know, we've all had that moment. I mean, hopefully when you are, well, you know, it happens when you're younger, and then as you get older, maybe it happens, you know, less ideally. But where you're just sitting there, you're just like, that's it. No one's ever going to love me again. I've blown my last chance. I'm going to die alone. A broken. I guess I'll just put on this Leonard Cohen album. You know, and then you sit at the window and it starts to rain. Ugh.
I guess I'll make some coffee. I'm out of cream. I'm just going to put my head in the oven.
It's electric, damn it.
Okay. Jesus.
Hug?
Christ.
Three hugs. Three hugs.
Before we end everything, so to speak, let's just say that these are the top five songs about a real-life romantic relationship. And I'm looking at number one, and it's making me smile. Not just because it's a little more upbeat, but just because it is a great song, and it's one of my all-time favorite rock songs. And it's one of the all-time great rock and roll stories as well. So,
Number one, because it has to be, is Eric Clapton, Layla.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just... Dave Marsh, who's a rock critic that I really like, he said that there are certain rock and pop compositions that are so personal where somebody reaches inside and they pull out an emotion that it is so raw and real. He said that it is akin to witnessing a suicide or a murder, and that there's only a few in every generation, and he says that Layla is the best of them, and I agree.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I think most people do know the story, but in case a listener doesn't, he was in love with George Harrison's wife,
Patty Harrison.
And it was sort of from afar. They hadn't begun any kind of an affair or anything, but he was in love with her, and he wrote this song about her.
Yeah.
And that apparently kind of helped sell him, and she decided she wanted to be with him, and he went to George Harrison's, dude, I'm in love with your wife. And he reportedly told him, well, do what you need to do.
And that they're actually, and it didn't impede their friendship apparently at all. He said it was an awkward, not threesome, but you know, an awkward division of the three of them working it all out. But he said that he and Harrison remained friends through the entire thing. He actually, when he finished this record with Derek and the Dominoes, who are a story in and of themselves, because half the band was, you know, died, you know, the bass player killed himself in a suicide pact with his mom. It was really a star-crossed band.
Wow.
And they did basically the one record. But he finished this recording, and he just, like, poured everything into this song. And then he went and he played it for Patty Harrison at a party where George and, like, all their friends were. And he's like, I wrote this for you. I'm in love with you. I have to have you now.
And how could you not hear this song and then just go, okay.
It's
you win.
This song is actually so raw that it almost hurts to listen to because...
Well, it's like he rips his heart out of his chest and nails it to your ear.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, and... I mean, that is really just as real as it can possibly get. And I was one of the very few people that loved the slowed-down acoustic version of Layla He Did Years Later, because the sort of unfortunate coda is that he and Patty Harrison ran away together, were married, and then eventually divorced. And it ended up not working out eventually. And so then when he did the unplugged Layla, it was sort of great, actually. It was sort of like looking at a little bit of... I mean this in a sort of beautiful, horrible way. It was like a burned-out flashbulb. It was like an echo of this thing that once happened to him.
Wow.
And it was a sort of... That was a sort of musical coda to the entire story, him doing that, like, soft, like, very lamentational version of this song. And then it goes on for, like, 40 minutes, and it's just, you know, it's just awesome.
Yeah, the riff itself, which is
oh, yeah.
You know, classic, it sounds desperate. It sounds like it's just... It's like... You know, splayed fingers just reaching for you.
It
sounds like that feeling you get in the pit of your stomach when you are in love with somebody and you want them so badly. I mean, it is that anxious, jangly nerve.
The tight, knotted, desperate, you know, it's like coiled snakes, you know, in a way where you just like, you're ratcheted up, you're so keyed up about everything. It's just beautiful. Mm. And then, of course, you know, it just goes into this, you know, this part, which is just beautiful. Mm. Well done, Don Taylor.
Very well done.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. All right. We're in a roll with top fives lately. We'll end it here. Mr. Big Jim Willig, you can find out more about him at facebook.com/Jim Willig, WILLIG, facebook.com/Jim Willig. And he will return next week with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Well done, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the time.
Let's see. We want to thank all of our guests this week, including Mr. Mike Russell, Roger Klein, who performs tonight at Everybody's, also Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Fun Employment Radio going to be in our studios next. You can find their show online at funemploymentradio.com around 6 o'clock Pacific time tonight. As always, at the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. So we thank you for your support. As always, without you, there ain't no us. My friends, it is Friday, November 12th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. Have a good weekend. See you Monday. Bye now.